This week's episode of Heavy Meta is brought to you by Face-to-Face Games. If you like paper cards, that's the place to get them.
No. Ladies and gentlemen.
Welcome to Heavy Meta, your source for Magic news, entertainment, and comedy.
What is up, motherfuckers? I'm Kevin Metal.
I'm Tony, and we have two very special guests with us tonight, replacing Tristan. You'll know my intro is not quite as good as his, but I'm trying. And tonight, we are talking about Legacy, and maybe some Green Machine. That might be a special thing, maybe, but definitely talking about Legacy. So joining us tonight, instead of a Gumby or a Maddie, or a Tristan this week, who we wish well off maple farming somewhere in the Great North, we have recent GP competitor, top 8 of GP Columbus, Aaron Kasperzak. Say hi, Aaron.
Hey, how you doing?
And my co-host, you will recognize his voice when you say it because it's so sultry you couldn't ever forget it from all the times everyone has watched our stream, Michael Polyak. Say hi, Mike.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Fantastic. So tonight, we want to talk about Legacy. Like I said, Aaron's off, fresh off of GP Top 8, and Michael, that's where his heart lives and always has been. So we actually came up with a bit of an itinerary for once, which is the second most professional thing this cast has ever done. First one was getting an editor, and we apologize for last week, Ken. I apologize thoroughly for Kevy and all of his shenanigans. Let's call it that.
Hold on 1 second. Mike finished like 101st or something in that GP, right?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. I want to talk about the GPs, so top 100 and first finisher. Runner up to the top 100. There we go.
Yeah, there you go. I like it.
That's pretty good.
I would have done. So we'll just start there.
Let's actually talk about the GP because that was kind of recent and we're on that topic. So congratulations to you, Aaron. We've said a couple times on the cast that, we were rooting for you and you came back with close to a trophy. Congratulations.
Thanks.
Close to a trophy. He's just all fuck you, man.
it's all about the trophy, Kevy. Trust me. That's important. But what did you play? What was your story there? How'd that go? Give us a little recap.
Well, I'm not going to go into like a complete.
Yeah,
recap,
exactly. Yeah. Just give us a sort of, you know.
But, yeah, I mean, obviously I played Miracles. There was a lot of Miracles in the whole tournament. Overall, I thought Professional Event Services did a pretty good job of the GP. Obviously I've heard like a lot of people talking about, you know, how disorganized they are and, you know, for the most part, it was run smoothly. Like, usually I'm pretty exhausted by the end of day one.
Mm. Well, you play Miracles, so that's fair.
Yeah, I mean, that too. But I mean, like, just in terms of, like, round time, like, a lot of GPs, there's a lot of downtime between rounds, and they can get pretty exhausting. The only real complaint that I had with that GP was the prize wall. I mean, the prize wall was like something straight out of the Great Depression. It was so bad.
There's a fucking roll of toilet paper and a loaf of bread. For
yeah. A piece of dragons.
The prize wall had food tickets or food stamps that you then had to go redeem again.
Oh, there's dragons maze. So yeah, toilet paper.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah. So like I said, day one, it just went like really smoothly, like round times were like super, you know, lots of time to spare and, you know, no, I remember at, Grand Prix New Jersey, actually, there was, like something like an hour downtime between rounds just because people like parked in the wrong spot. So like people had to like
move their
cars. Like they told everybody, like, hey, listen, if you're parked outside, you gotta go move your shit. And, that was like an hour of wasted time, but at this GP, there was none of that. Go ahead.
I mean, like downtime as far as, you know, going to rounds, like playing can be as exhausting as not playing, right? I mean, you always play Magic because you always play blue white. So you literally play the maximum amount of Magic humanly possible.
Yeah, I mean, like, in my opinion, you feel it, like, right after, you know what I mean? Like, if you play, like, a full, like, hour round, like, you're not tired when you're actually playing, but the minute you, like, step up, mm-hmm. then you can feel the exhaustion sort of hitting in, and then it's, like, if there's half hour wait, then you're just feeling exhausted for, like,
well,
half an
yeah,
hour.
That, you've got that, and then on top of it, you've got, like, you know, it is nice to have a little bit of downtime to be able to, like, get to your next fucking round, you know, your next matchup and stuff. You gotta have a little bit of time, or grab something to eat if you need, but when you've got that much downtime in between rounds, it just makes the day that much longer, too. By the end of it, you're just like, man, I could have, you know, if there wasn't a half hour or an hour in between fucking rounds, I could have, like, finished the day 4 hours ago and not be completely fucking exhausted right now.
Yeah, exactly.
That being said, like, all of day two, I felt like every downtime I was just chatting outside with Aaron, like, seemed like we both finished our rounds fairly early day two.
Yeah, I would say that. I mean, I don't know, like, I'm a pretty fast player, though, so.
Oh, yeah. See, this all seems foreign as shit to me anyway, because I, you know, one, I'm not at your level of competitive play, but also I'm a burn player, so every tournament I play has lots of downtime in between rounds for me. And then I'm also a raging alcoholic, so there's a lot of times I end up a little tipsy and can't play very well in the last
rounds. I don't know. I played against Burn in round 13 of that tournament, and that was the longest round of the entire tournament for me, I think. Like, we went all the way to, like, 1 minute left on the clock.
Wow, that's brutal.
Oh, wow.
Well, I guess, you know, depending on the matchups and shit like that, you know, I have had those ones that just last for fucking ever, and that's usually when I'm just all, ugh, I'm over this, bye.
Oh, it was actually a crazy game. It was probably the most memorable match of the entire tournament for me, because, so it was, yeah, it was game one, he got me, like, really fast. You know, I couldn't really compete.
Right.
Game two took almost 35 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because...
Oh, my mind!
Yeah, yeah, no, like, I just had him in the countertop lock forever, and then he just kept on, you know, draw, go, and, like, trying to squeeze in a spell, but I had the answer. And I was at two life for, like, maybe 20 minutes, and, yeah, he draws his card for the turn, and he just, like, slams it on the table, Barbarian Ring, got you! And then I'm like, whoa, 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 hold on, Snapcaster, Swords my own Snapcaster, game goes on for, like, another 10 minutes. And then, yeah, like, I was completely out of win conditions, too. I think I only had, like, one Snapcaster Mage left in my deck, and then I finally drew it, and then...
Jesus.
Yeah, it was quite the game.
Yeah, I have very short attention span, so those kind of games drive me insane, too, because I was like, oh, my God, can this not be over? But of course, you know, again, this is coming from two different opposite ends of the spectrum of Magic player.
Yeah, I mean, he played really smart. I mean, he was taking all the necessary lines to,
right.
You know, squeeze in the next 3 points of damage, but I just, you know, I always had the answer, I guess.
How sick would that be if he had waited for you to, like, play your Snapcaster and then just Barbarian Ring you in response? If he was just that patient?
Well, no, I was specifically holding onto the Snapcaster in case any, like, funny stuff went down. Like,
yeah, so I'm saying if he had just played his Barbarian Ring and just said pass and not activated it.
Oh, yeah, like slow rolled it. Yeah.
Well, we wanted to talk about the GP for a couple of specific reasons. It says here on the notes.
Bring it back to old heavy meta when, like, TSG first got on and showed up in show notes and shit. It's like bringing the teacher an apple. I think he was just trying to, like, make me and Maddie impressed with him or something, and he was just bringing show notes every fucking week. And then once he, you know, he got used to it, he's just like, oh, no, I didn't write shit down.
Well, Mike, before that, though, what was your experience like at the GP, Mike? Because you said it was your first Legacy GP, so I'm just kind of...
That's what I wanted to get to. So we'll get to Mike's experience, because that's sort of the opposite end of the spectrum, right? Like, you finished 101st, but Aaron, you had to be sitting at the top tables all weekend, right? Pretty focused on Magic, so...
Yeah, for the most part.
Mike, what was your experience like?
So the tournament itself was super great, and my day one experience and my day two experience were really different. My day two experience, like, I went into day two at 7-2, which still puts me in top 8 contention. But it just felt like a free roll the whole time. Like, oh man, I'm just winning this match. I won this match. I won another match. And, like, that felt super fun, and it didn't really matter how I did day two, but day one felt much different, partly because it started off with a really bad experience of just playing against a weaker player and not having a good time at all. But once I got through that, it was just a bit more stressful day one, trying to grind it out. Up until I played my Winnenin. My Winnenin, you'd think, would be really stressful, but my opponent was super relaxed and, like, we were both laughing and having a great time. I won my first Winnenin, which was awesome, but, like, my opponent was still super happy and great.
That was awesome.
It was neat.
That is really cool. Especially at that level, you don't really see that too often. You know, it's one thing at F&M when people are just like, oh, yeah, whatever. But, like, you know, everybody's there to compete and to win, and when you're in a situation like that, and to still be able to relax, have fun, because, I mean, you know, that's what you're doing. Yeah, it's competitive, but you're there having fun playing Magic. You're playing a game, you know, and it's nice when people can, you know, mutually just have, you know, respect for each other, play the game, have a good time, and, you know, even at the, you know, higher level like that.
That actually surprised me a lot, too, is, like I've made day twos in Legacy GPs before, but I mean, it was round 14 and I was playing against Ed D'Amico. He's kind of like a well-known Legacy player, and I was like genuinely surprised that how sort of like laid back he was.
Oh right.
You know, like he like because you know like I was reasonably like tense. Like I wasn't nervous per se, but I was just more like I was just really focused and in the zone. And then I went to play against him, and he was just super, like, laid back and chill, and, you know, it was a good time.
That's cool. Right on.
So this is actually a topic that Mike and I spoke about on the stream a couple times, and it was sort of the general atmosphere of the difference between a Legacy GP and a modern GP. And Mike, you're actually, like, kind of the perfect example, because this year you went to your first three GPs. All sort of in, like, different capacities. So I guess maybe Detroit and, like, your Modern and Legacy experience were sort of with the same intention of playing and doing well. But you went to a standard GP, a Modern GP, and a Legacy GP. What were some of the stark differences between sort of the player base and the atmosphere? Because there had to be some, right?
Yeah, so I went to GP Detroit, and that was the modern GP where Eldrazi was, like,
Eldrazi Winter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I didn't end up facing Eldrazi at all in that tournament, surprisingly. but all the players were like, I don't know. It seemed like nobody knew what any of the cards did at all. Judges.
For everyone at home, Mike, you're a Tron player.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
But ew! I snuck him on, Kevy.
if I wasn't playing Burn or Infect or something like that, I probably would get into playing Tron. So I just
so like even a card like Ancient Stirrings, that the one green sorcery that looks at the top five and gets a colorless card.
Mm-hmm.
I used it to get a land to get a Temple Garden, and my opponent said, "I'm not sure you can do that." I said, "Let's call a judge," and the judge said, "I'm like pretty sure you can do that, but I'm not sure, so we'll like call someone else." Like, really? This is what's happening right now?
That's like, awkward.
Yeah, whereas in like a Legacy GP, people are like so used to like counterbalance triggers and stacking things, and like in response I'll vent your stuff, and like, I don't know.
It might be the uneducated Kevy asking this question, but like something like that, for example, you know, like Legacy GPs, and I'm sure it's probably not much different between standard and modern GPs, but like, do TOs generally try to get certain judges that have been around longer or that have a lot more experience with Legacy for shit like that, or they pretty much just go with the same pool of judges they always go with?
I think it's the second one. I think they don't look for Legacy.
And of course, you know, in any, like, you know, in a big room like that, any, you know, mix of judges, you're going to have some of them that have been playing for fucking years and that play Legacy recreationally or even competitively, whatever. And they know the shit that they need to know. Whereas you're going to have other ones that are like maybe newer judges, weren't around for that, or just never really got into Legacy, so might not know those things. You know, you'll have, I'm sure, a fairly good cross section no matter what, but I'm just curious if there was any sort of emphasis put on like, hey, we're having a Legacy GP, and we don't have those too often. Maybe we should hit up, like, the Legacy judges.
But I'm going to interject here quick and brag a little bit, because all of the face-to-face opens, we specifically try and pick judges who are attuned to the format.
Well,
there are some judges who are sort of people judges too, sort of like being a little bit more adept at managing and really like a good TO will try and develop their team and even Graham at our store, who's a level two, working towards his level three. He's currently working on judge coordination. So for the GP, he did all of the like scouting and resume scouring and all that and had a pretty heavy input in who the judge staff was and that was like, you know.
Well, that's cool. That
like way more than the number of listeners we have for sure. He was coordinating.
Nice.
Dozens, plural.
Yeah. Subtle digs at our own fucking podcast. or not so subtle digs. No, that's good though. I'm glad that you guys are doing that, and you know, it seems logical to me.
It is possible. It can be done.
And I'm sure, like on a larger scale, it might be harder because depending on the location, you know, it's not like Wizards has the money to just, you know, fly their specialty judges around all over the place. But you know, well, I'm not going to say they don't have the money, but they're not going to put the money into.
What I actually heard was that GP Columbus was actually overstaffed with judge.
Hmm. Really?
Interesting.
Yeah, I could see that.
Did you guys notice that or feel that or?
Well, the first thing I noticed was off was because on day one, I had to call a judge for something, and it was Graham who came over and fixed it. And so
nice.
He's looking like he's working hard and everything. And then, you know, I'm walking outside on day two and I see like Graham in like, you know, a tank top and shorts, like walking around. And I'm like, oh, what? What's still working? He's like, yeah.
Yeah, Florida.
Well, those are the secret judges, the ones that just wander around and like try to catch you.
Yeah, like secret shoppers and shit.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, well, it's interesting to see. So all of your tournaments, your GPs, Michael, were they all different tournament organizers too? Or was did you have double PES?
Detroit was PES and so was Columbus. And then the standard one was face-to-face. That was the Toronto one.
Yeah, so what I've noticed is I've heard a lot of people this year from PES events saying, I know PES gets a bad rap, but this event wasn't that bad. How long before that rap goes away? Because I've heard some pretty good things about the events this year. The players have been definitely more satisfied this year than years before. And after the face-to-face GP, I feel like there was a bit of a standard set.
Yes. So Columbus was much better than Detroit. When I wrote my tournament report for GP Detroit, the picture I chose for PES was Goblin Bowling Team. That part is PES. Like, they're just a bunch of oafs that wander around and, like, don't really care about anybody. But they did much better in GP.
How big was Detroit?
Like just over 2,000 people or just under? Like around 2,000.
Oh, wow. Yeah, around 2,000. I thought it was like 1,885 or something, but...
You know, so like they're getting better, but like they lost a bunch of events. Are they even doing any GPs in 2016 or 2017? I don't think so.
I'm not sure.
I wonder if that's because of their bad rep.
Yeah. I mean, I know players who didn't want to go to a GP because it was PES. Like, there's some people who didn't go to the Legacy GP because it was PES.
Damn. That's shitty. I don't have a lot of experience with GPs, but I've been around enough of that and I've seen a lot of it too. And like, you know, tournament organizers got to get their shit together. Yeah, you're going to have problems at times. Like, you know, sometimes there's unforeseen shit that happens, and it is what it is. And as long as you, like, you know, I guess PR-wise, you handle it well, and you basically just announce, like, hey, sorry, this was kind of out of our control. We're doing our best to try to fix the situation. You know, you can't go too far. You can't, you know, bend over backwards all the time.
The biggest disaster of the year was the SCG event so far, right? What, Charlotte?
Yeah, wasn't that when the fucking the software went fucking haywire or something?
Yeah, exactly. But that was a Star City event, and that was the same weekend that Channel Firewall, because this was Modern Weekend, that Channel Firewall was hosting their flawless event on the other side of the country.
Yeah.
And this actually segues into a point that I wanted to talk about, because GP Columbus was not covered. The North American Legacy GP was not covered, like the weekend of Disaster Mode wasn't covered, but the Channel Firewall weekend was covered, so I guess Wizards sort of sort of covered their own ass there, but
heads their best on accident.
Exactly. Yeah, it was strange and a little disheartening to me that we didn't get to see our hometown Legacy GP covered, and I didn't get to watch Aaron, so then I could have pictures of him all over the store.
Yeah, but I mean, sometimes we take like a bit too much of a North America centric view. Like Europe has a crazy good Legacy scene, and like if we missed them, then you'd have the same conversation in Europe. Like, why aren't they covering us? We're super awesome.
Right, right.
Yeah, but my argument would be just do both. Like, it's not.
Yeah.
No, honestly though, like.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean,
people are always like looking for like Legacy coverage and, you know, as much Legacy as they can get because it doesn't happen that much in a year, right? So people are always enthusiastic, like even if they don't play Legacy, like people are genuinely like enthusiastic to, you know, see what kind of things people are doing in the format, right? So it's
I guess, I mean, and that comes down to like, we've had this debate and this conversation over and over and over on this cast in different capacities. It's like, it's a weird, you know, it's a weird line to walk because I get in a way where fucking, you know, Wizards is like, well, it's Legacy. The player base is a lot smaller than it is for, you know, Standard and Modern. And then on top of it, like, we're not selling any fucking cards, to Legacy players. Like, you know,
I don't think that's totally true when we have things like Conspiracy coming in with new.
Right.
Cards and a potential plus something Eternal Masters, right?
We're not selling any cards is probably a poor choice of words, but we're not selling nearly as many cards to Vintage and Legacy players, you know, as we are to, I mean, not even so much Modern. And I mean, like, fuck, dude, Modern is, you know, quite a bit bigger, you know, has a quite a bit bigger player base than Eternal formats, but you still have, like, you know, the lack of interest from Wizards. You know, I guess the consensus from most people is like, well, they give a fuck about Standard. They give a fuck about pushing Standard because people in Standard people that play Standard buy packs from stores, and that's that. You know, whereas if you're getting Modern cards, you know, you might still be buying packs because there's Modern staples in some of the newer sets. But it's not as important. And then like you're buying supplemental product. You know, you're selling supplemental product to a very small fucking player base, subjectively.
Yeah. My argument to that, though, is, like, Legacy and Eternal in general, it gets people interested in Magic, right? Like, people just like watching that kind of stuff. Like,
well, and see, that's the thing is, from what I've heard, and this isn't me speaking in the sense, like, I'm interested in it. I like it. I think it's cool. Where I'm at in my journey through fucking Magic the Gathering, I love, like, learning about fucking Legacy and Vintage, and I'd like to watch, like, out of all of the fucking GPs that they could possibly fucking do coverage for, those are the ones I'd watch. I could give a fuck about Standard, but I think for a lot of, like, I guess for the majority of Magic players, if to put in a broad term, that's not their gig, you know? Like, they're like, I don't really give a shit about what's happening in that format that I can't afford to play. I'm more concerned on like what the hot new Standard fucking tech is this week because I gotta go fucking shark my F&M or whatever. Or I'm gonna go play the fucking next GP, you know, next weekend, and I wanna know what everybody else is doing in Standard and maybe Modern. But, you know, Legacy, it's hard. Legacy's gotta be one of those things, not even acquired taste, it's a bad term too. But it's just one of those things that I don't think they see as much interest in from the broad community. Whereas, like, yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. I love this show. I think it's fucking very interesting. Even though I don't know the format and I haven't really got into it, I'd like to. You know, I'm at that point where I'd like to, but I think there's just more focused on the dollar and entry-level players. And entry-level players, if you try to push Standard versus Legacy, it's so much easier, I guess, to understand Standard because there's more of it going on. They're going to have more people to interact with that play Standard. Whereas Legacy,
Think about it this way. It's like not covering the Legacy GP is like you take care of all of the people who come into your cafe off the street and they're the first time and you give a great impression and everyone's really happy and then you're not taking care of your regulars.
Yeah, I get that. I totally understand that analogy, but it's also kind of like the, you know, fucking, there's businesses out there that don't give a shit about their fucking regulars, really. They're interested in the people coming in the front door. They're interested in more people coming in the front door.
Hey, regulars still come in the front door, man. That's the thing. Like, they need to be aware of who they're catering to, and legacy players do spend money. They just, like, they are involved in the game, and they flew to this GP, and they took part in this tournament, and they'll consume, you know, the things that you give them, like Eternal Masters and online products and vintage, access to vintage cards at an affordable rate. Like, there's definitely a market there. Like, man, Eternal players are people too.
But like, put it this way, Anthony, like, I bought a box of Modern Masters 1, and I bought, I'll buy a box of, like, Eternal Masters or something. But there are people, every single set release, they'll go out and buy 3 boxes, sit down on the Friday at midnight and just open them in the store, throw away all their commons, and just, like, waddle off with their big stack of rares that they just opened. Like, I'm not doing that every 3 months. So.
And that's as you shouldn't, sir. It sounds like a terrible fucking idea. But these are
the people keeping Standard afloat, right?
Yeah. And that's the thing is like, and that's just firing fucking money, you know, into Hasbro. Whereas, you know, again, the vintage players, you know, they're like, yeah, you know, you'll buy a product like that, you know, like a Modern Masters box, you know, Eternal Masters box, you know, maybe fucking like some conspiracy packs or something. Or, I mean, you know, let's face it, we're going to buy the singles we want and that's that. But, you know, you'll have people that will go buy the boxes. But it's not, like, you know, it's a drop in the bucket compared to what, like, people are doing for Standard, so that's why I think they push it. And don't get me wrong, I'm not advocating that. I think it sucks, but it's the way of the world, and there's not much we can do about it. I don't like the fact that Tony's got fucking, you know, legal problems for stealing power, but it's the way of the world.
My argument would be that it just, like, to offer video coverage to, like, a GP, like, it doesn't cost them any money, right? Like, all you're doing is airing that stuff. And yeah,
they have the equipment. I mean, I guess it costs them.
Let's say they're not cutting back on coverage, and they're actually covering 2 separate GPs. They're covering their stuff in Europe, and they're covering their stuff here. That means one of 2 things are going on. One, they either have their own equipment in Europe, and they just ship that around Europe when they do their coverage there. Or they ship their equipment from the United States to Europe, which I guarantee you costs more than just buying your own equipment. So I'm of the firm believer that there actually is 2 sets of streaming equipment, and they don't send all of the same technical people and coverage people and all of that to one GP. It's not one group of 20 people that only do coverage. So I think with a little bit of, like, I think they could have covered both. I think that's not unrealistic.
I think that they should have been able to. And I think kind of going back to the analogy of, like, you know, your regulars and stuff like that. Like, even if it's not, even if your focus is on bringing heads in the door and not worrying about your regulars, when you're talking about something like whether you cover the event or not, you're talking about, like, we also occasionally give a free drink to the motherfucker that sits at our bar every night. It doesn't cost you shit, or it barely costs you anything. It's not that big of a deal, and it's somewhat of an incentive. It'd be one thing if they're not focused on legacy players, but it's that throw them a bone sort of thing. Like, you know, shit, we could have fucking put, you know, could have had coverage because it barely cost us fucking anything in the grand scheme of things. So fuck it, why not?
This thing too is all brought from my frustration of having to watch Aaron lose in the top 8 by clicking refresh on my browser on the Wizard site. And you're playing Miracles for a fucking hour.
That's fucking terrible.
Yeah, so it was like watching the Leafs versus Bruins update on Sportsnet, where you're just clicking refresh on the phone and you're like, oh, they're winning. Oh, they're losing. How the fuck did they lose this? What happened? That's a true story too.
About it.
Yeah, that's how I watched the top eight there as far as coverage goes. But there is only two Legacy GPs coming up.
Before we get off that, now what would the logistics be behind, say, you know, because I've noticed, you know, in the last, I'd say, 2, maybe 3 years, you started seeing a lot more, like, you know, of course it's not as, there's not as much production value to it, but, you know, you got, like, F&M that, like, people are, you know, like, local game stores and shit are streaming their fucking F&Ms and doing shit like that. So, you know, you've got this issue where you've got, you know, Wizards apparently has some problem with doing like video coverage of all of the fucking GPs. They decided to cut them back and they're only doing some of them. But where do you know, at what point does like maybe the tournament organizer get into doing that? If you know, if people are unhappy and you know, say, you know, you're in tight with face to face, just as an example, it's, you know, say the tournament organizer decides, hey, you know what, since they're not covering, or if they're not doing coverage for this, we're gonna do fucking coverage for it. We'll put it up on our channel on fucking Twitch and fucking get people to it. We've got fucking free reign of like commercials or graphics or whatever we want to do to fucking advertise our fucking company anyway. And then, you know, we'll do fucking coverage for it.
What I suspect though is they, like, I know Wizards is really like pushed certain commentators, and I think they just want to have their own kind of branding in terms of people commentating.
Oh yeah, Wizards doesn't sell their advertising space like at fucking all.
Well, no,
they do 12 hours of coverage and then 12 hours of replay.
No, I totally get that. Like when Wizards is going to do a GP, but when it comes to a fucking like a Legacy GP that Wizards decides they're not going to fucking do video coverage of, then I mean, can't the fucking tournament organizer be like, oh, all right, if you guys aren't going to fucking cover it, then we'll go ahead and do it and we'll do video coverage of it. And then that's a business opportunity for them. Then the players get what they want. They can see it. It may not be, you know, the same as watching like the official Wizards coverage of a GP where they've got all their own shit going on. It may be a little bit lower budget. But I mean, fuck, dude, renting equipment can't be that fucking, that big of a deal. And you
I totally agree. Massive
fucking advertising opportunity for your company because Wizards doesn't want to do that. And the only thing I see is Wizards being all, well, shit, they're taking up all of our advertising space. Maybe we should go back to covering all the GPs.
Well, what about this too? What if, because Michael and I were actually involved with coverage and we could go into some pretty extensive detail on like what a day would look like and sort of what the end product you get from that amount of work comes from and that amount of people and that amount of actually financial investment. It's not that much, but just imagine a GP tournament organizer who's baller as fuck and hires in like a sick third party commentary team to like just come in and fucking crush it and like do all the post production and like do all that stuff and just make your event look like the most insane thing ever.
And then it kind of punks fucking Wizards under the table, and then Wizards is probably, rather than doing the sensible thing and be like, oh man, that was amazing, you guys just out-coveraged the shit out of us, so we want to go ahead and start talking to you guys about maybe doing this, Wizards will probably just send you a fucking cease and desist order.
Well, isn't this how Dota was made?
You know what I would totally love if, like, they did that, if they hired, like, a super professional company? You know how they have those, like, cheesy, like, PlayStation 2-style graphics, like, for their intros?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I would love it if somebody just did, like, this, you know, massive, you know, $1,000, like, you know, graphical budget job and, like, made it, like, look, you know, pristine as hell. And Wizards got all pissy because they have their, like, shitty, like, PS2 graphics.
Yeah. I mean, there's already big differences with, like, how Hearthstone is covered. Like,
right?
That stuff's all crazy. It looks insane.
Oh, yeah. They've got, like, the set going on that looks like the whole fucking World of Warcraft world.
They've got Brian Kibler as one of their commentators. Like,
yeah.
They're legit. Now, check this out.
Wizards off. By the way.
Well, yeah, probably. That's why they're punishing the rest of us. No, so, first it was the playmat, then it was Hearthstone. So, when I, after we hosted the GP, a gentleman got in contact with us. His name was Chris. He hosts another convention called Good Game Con, and that's like a video game convention. Mm-hmm. So he hooked me up with a couple of tickets, and I went and checked them out, and I was looking at all of their streaming areas because they were in sort of the same venue that we were in. And each, like, booth, each sort of, like, section of his con, which had to have, like, 3,000 people in it, and they were all playing console games or computer games.
Right.
So the Hearthstone section was like six, like bar top high tables with eight iPads chained and powered into them each. And then they had like a commentator section with like a backdrop, like kind of the one, like the ones that we had at the Face booth at Toronto, like the nice big Velcro ones. And they had like commentators and all this stuff. And Chris was telling me that not only did Blizzard like send all the iPads, like, what, 8, 16, 20, like 32 iPads. But they sent like all the commentators booth and stuff, and they were just like, yeah, like, tell people to have fun. And the fucking weirdest part is, because all of the other booths had like nice backdrops and like the chairs that you see streamers sit in, those things are like a fucking $1,000.
Those are fucking ridiculous.
Like, those are ridiculous. So, like, to see commentators with them, and, yeah. Like, I know those commentators didn't put those chairs in the back of their fucking Honda Civics and drive them across the country to get here. Like, that's not how this happened, okay? These were fucking flown in. These are, like, part of their equipment and part of their setup, like, multi-$1,000 setup for two people to sit their fucking ass behind a desk in front of a piece of fabric, okay? Mm-hmm. And all of this stuff was provided for them by the companies that they were helping cover, that they were doing coverage for.
Yeah.
And a lot of these channels had, Chris was telling me after that he had somewhere around like 200,000 concurrent viewers watching Good Game Con over 24 channels or whatever like that. So it was like 10, on average about 10 or 11,000 people per channel across 20 channels watching his one event.
Yeah,
so,
that's insane. Yeah, Wizards will send you starter decks.
That is fucking insane. So I actually got out and I tweeted at Helene and I was like, hey, just so you know, I'm at this place, like, to hashtag, like, tweet at Blizzard, tweet at Wizards, and this is what they got for their commentary, like, you want to help out face-to-face games? And the message I got was, we recently switched our logo, so all of our print material has been destroyed.
Oh, yeah,
sorry.
I remember you talking about that. Yeah, you're like, hey, it'd be sweet if we could get, like, some old stuff from, like, oh, no, we changed shit and we destroyed all the old stuff.
It's all gone.
It's like they're allergic to money. Like, it baffles me. Like, we're stuck in that spot where we all love this fucking game. The game is like a fucking masterpiece. That's all there is to it. It's so fucking, so diverse and so deep that it's ridiculous. But it's run by, I don't want to be the dick that keeps fucking attacking Watsy, but it's like it's run by a barrel full of monkeys that just, like, have something better to do, and I'm not sure what it is, like, unless they're secretly running Blizzard at the same time and nobody knows about it, which obviously isn't the case, but it's like, you know, it's like they're allergic to money and good ideas, you know, like, so there's
one good thing they have done, though, which we should definitely, like,
absolutely, because I do shit on Wizards a bit, and I do need to say good things about them.
They reprinted Berserk, so we're getting that back. And, like, that's awesome. It's like a $90 card. They're like, yeah, sure, we'll print it again.
That's, you know,
yeah, just have it.
That does bring up, you know, like, I don't always shit on Wizards. And, like, last episode of the episode before, we were talking about fucking the conspiracy spoilers. And, you know, some of the reprints that we're getting in there, it's sweet. Like, it's like they're finally listening and paying attention on that front. You know, of course, like, there's a billion other fronts to their business that could definitely use some help. Fucking
everything but Damnation.
That's exactly what I was about to say.
Yeah.
I guarantee you it has to be a troll at this point. Like, they're purposely
trolling. They're like, oh, no, like, for real, we're just like, we're never giving you Damnation. Like, the next news we hear about fucking Damnation is that they added it to the reserve list. they're just all, asshole.
Even better. So far we have a continuous troll. So we got a 4-mana black sweeper in standard, but it was conditional. So maybe we're just gonna only get 5 mana sort of unconditional or 6 mana conditional with bonus and white, and then forever we'll just get 4 mana slightly bad wraths that come through standard forever and just never see Damnation.
You're gonna bring back the fuck that. What are those?
The Languish was a slap in the face.
They're gonna bring back the, what are they, the World Championship decks or whatever, the gold border decks.
Oh god.
They're gonna bring those back and put Damnation.
And they're like, now all you Commander players can have your Damnation.
Yeah,
you're welcome.
But it's not tournament legal.
Yeah, exactly. For all you Commander players, you're welcome.
Yes, we're in a gold fucking order, like, oh, look, we brought Damnation back, you fucking chumps. it's a love-hate relationship that I have with Wizards. Like, I do feel bad because of the employees that I do know and am friends with. Like, I feel bad when I shit on Wizards on the cast. But then at the same time, it's like, oh, eh, well, I mean, you guys know what you signed up for. Like, this is heavy meta.
Well, Michael actually made a really good point with Berserk being in this set, because now that we've seen a lot of the pieces, I feel like barrier to entry is something that is pretty intimidating for people when they hear about Legacy and they hear about people getting into Legacy. Me, honestly, myself, just got into Legacy, within the last, say, 2 years, 2.5 years, since I started talking with Kelly about Face and right. We had the meeting with Sal. I sort of like shipped off all my cards and kept enough to build a Legacy burn deck. And I took it to a SCG Syracuse 2 years ago with Dan and Peter and came 65th, one spot out of cashing daggers.
Ah.
But that was my initial foray into Legacy, and I did it because it was the affordable deck, the burn deck, and
oh yeah,
and it was actually kind of
and
it
also
was actually
because
kind of like
burn
in a good
awesome.
Spot.
Yeah, you
yeah, won. Well, it was specifically like in a good spot at the time, so that gave me like a little more incentive to want to play it. But right now, I sort of feel like that's
nobody wants to buy Burn, the cheap deck, to get into Legacy when it's in a bad spot, because you're just like, oh, well, I could get it.
Yeah, but
it's gonna lose.
But that's the point that I'm trying to make. No, not currently. I'm saying at that time. So the point that I'm trying to make is now currently, are Death and Taxes and sort of infect good decks in Legacy, because we seem to be like getting pushed towards all of the new players making their entry through those sort of two and now three decks. No, Burn, Death and Taxes, and Infect are all sort of relatively affordable decks to get to start a Legacy, and they're good, right?
I think Burn is a really good deck. I mean, the issue that I have with Burn, and like, it's tough telling a lot of new players, is like, yeah, I want to build like the cheapest Legacy deck. Well, build Burn, but Burn's not really my playstyle. You know, like they don't like playing Burn in other formats, so it's hard to, you know, push someone to that deck if they don't enjoy it, for sure. But
yeah,
you know.
And it's one of those things too. I definitely enjoy fucking playing Burn. That's my style. I've always kind of been into it, and it's great for me. But yeah, and it's not exactly one of those things where it's like, oh, this is how you get your foot in the door with Legacy. It's not like you can just take a Legacy Burn deck and then start gradually turning it into something fucking completely different, a whole different fucking style, because none of those cards are really gonna, I mean, other than like Lightning Bolt and shit, like the cheap cards, none of those cards are really gonna like port over into anything else. So it's not like, oh, well, if I buy a Burn deck, I can get out, start playing Legacy.
But that's not even really true anymore. That's not even really true, because there's actually a quality blue-red Delver deck with Price of Progress you know, more basic lands than normal. And yeah, like maybe it has Force of Wills and Dazes, but these are not like the price of like Moat or Tabernacle or a playset of Underground Seas. Like, yeah, the barrier to entry is higher than everything except Vintage. And you get sort of rewarded in the community and the depth of the format and sort of the unlimited potential you get by buying into a format like Legacy. And I think that's like really rewarding. And like I said, now that we're getting Berserk reprinted, we just got an Umezawa's Jitte and a Dark Depths reprint in the form of From the Vault. Everyone fucking hates the look of those cards, so those are going to be cheap. And then we have, no, but really, and we have, recently we got a Stoneforge Mystic GP promo print, then we got...
See, that's where I do have an issue, is like, I get that everything else, the other reprints, that's fine, but like when we, like the Stoneforge reprint, like, that's not a reprint. GP promo reprint, that's not injecting shit for fucking cards into the fucking system. Like, it's...
Okay, well, they did the same thing with the Jitte and the Batterskull, and if you want to go buy those cards right now, you can do it, and they're all of them are less than $50. Canadian dollars, too, Kevin. Think about it that way. So the fact that, yeah, maybe there's not, like, a million copies floating around, but you can walk into pretty much any store and get a GP promo Batterskull. You are probably going to be able to find a Jitte promo, and now you're definitely going to be able to find it from the Vault promo, and you're definitely going to be able to find a Stoneforge Mystic. And that's, like, sort of the core to these decks, and your other cards for this deck, like, in the form of Wasteland, Aether Vial, Flicker Wisp, Mother of Ruins, all of these cards have multiple printings. So to get it, and you require zero dual lands. Like, Rashad and Ford is sort of like your heavy hitter at the current moment, but while Caracas is still an Eternal Masters, yes, it's heavy hitter, but it's not a $300-$500 land like some of the heavy dual lands play, right? Like, four-color Delver, you're looking at multiple thousands of dollars just to cast a spell, you know, just to be able to cast Days. And your deck needs to be built that way when you play those decks, so you can play Days and you can cast your green-black spells and however that is. But Death and Taxes seems to be, the deck's like, it's a deck that Wizards has like handed to us and been like, here are the cards, shuffle them up, you will make people dead sometimes. Like, it's not the best deck, it's not the worst deck, but it kind of has game all around, and it's pushing everyone into the meta. Do you guys who play Legacy more than me, because I watch it all, but do you guys feel like Infect and Death and Taxes and Burn affect the meta that you guys are involved in?
Well, go ahead.
So I was going to say, like, when we were talking about giving someone Burn as a first deck and, like, suggesting that to them, being able to suggest Death and Taxes is sort of, like, on a totally different axis where... If you sit someone down and say, here's how you play Burn, just point it at their face, they'll do okay. But for Death and Taxes, it's like a pile of garbage cards that don't do anything, really. But with experience and you know, like, what your opponent's trying to do, then magically the cards work together and, like, you can actually win with them if you have the skill. So it's a weird deck for Wizards to be pushing.
It is weird, but I find the people who are picking up the Death and Taxes deck are players who are skilled Magic players, especially for us and the atmosphere that we're around. The younger players, like the 14 to 17-year-old kids who would play any deck you give them in their hand, and they're eager to learn, they're itching to learn, maybe it is the right deck to sort of get them introduced to the format and get them really hooked on something that's pretty complicated and pretty rewarding and not that expensive, and maybe it is the, like, you know, gateway drug to Legacy between the sort of aggro control deck that Death and Taxes can be, and the aggro combo deck that Infect can be, and the aggro burn deck that Burn can be. They're really pushing the non-control decks, the non-underground sea tundra decks.
Well, you also have, like, you know, your average, like, I'm new to Legacy and getting interested in it player is going to be somebody that's got a bit of experience playing the game. Like, you know, you don't just, like, oh, well, I want to play with all the, you know, walk into a store, learn about Magic, and decide you want to play Legacy. It's, you know, you're going to go through the other shit first. You're going to get your, you know, your interactions down and stuff. And then, like, to get
there
into
Legacy... people who do that, and they're, like, 10-year-old kids, and they're like, I want to play with Jace the Mind Sculptor, and you're kid... Yeah. 5 years and you're in.
Yeah, no, okay. But for the most part, you're going to have them, like, you know, your entry-level Legacy players are going to be people that have been around the game for a bit that are wanting to break into Legacy, but, you know, there is the price barrier. So things like, you know, Death and Taxes, like, I get what you're saying, but, like, at the same time, like, Death and Taxes might not be that big of a deal because, you know, to get into Legacy, you have to want to get into Legacy, I guess. And so you're willing to, like, you know, you know enough about the way the cards work, you know enough about interactions, to sit down and learn how this fucking deck works. I mean, fucking read a primer or something and figure out how the deck works and then fucking jump into it. And get into the format that way. Like, I don't see anybody, even for a quote unquote budget legacy deck, I don't see any players, maybe not any, there are some oddballs out there, but, you know, I don't see anybody like just being like, oh, fuck it, I'm gonna get into legacy, I know nothing about format at all, I'm just gonna fucking buy into a deck, but I'm gonna do it cheap. So I'm gonna get deck. I don't know how it works, but
that's a perfect point to sort of move on to the next part of like lending decks to other people, because that's another way to get people into legacy, is to have a spare legacy deck and let your friend play it, right? Mm-hmm. And this is the type of deck that you could sort of like stumble into as somebody who's already invested and committed to the game, and maybe you played a bunch of Eternal / Modern Masters and you got an extra set of Aether Vials and Wastelands, and that's what I'm saying, like, you don't even really have to be playing a ton of Legacy, just a bunch of Magic, to have this Death and Taxes deck. You could have gotten a Thalia's from the WMCQ just showing up, you know what I mean? Like, you could have actually gotten a large number of the pieces just from drafting the Masters sets. Right. So, most Legacy players that I know fall into one of two categories. You're either an established Legacy player, and you have, like, your cards, and maybe you have a couple of decks, and you do that, and you play Magic. Or you're like a budding Legacy player, and you're eager, and maybe you have some of your other cards, and you have, like, one Legacy deck. I know Michael and Aaron both have multiple Legacy decks, and I have multiple Legacy decks, and I would lend my deck to a buffoon like Kevy.
Yes.
Which means I would need to lend my deck
pretty much
to
anybody.
Which means I would lend my deck to like a 14-year-old gentleman like Josh Bullock, who I now have shouted out 4 shows in a row, so respect to that little kid. But you guys too, you lend your decks to people, right? And they're not cheap. Like, Michael, you have multiple decks. What do you do with yours when you see a budding Legacy player who is interested in what you're playing?
So, to put it into perspective, just how important lending out cards is among the community, I lend cards out to, like, I lent cards to Aaron for the GP, and I also borrowed some cards for many events, and it's just, you can't have a full collection of everything at all times, so it's super important for even, like, well-established players to share cards. I'm totally happy to lend out, like, my Delver deck. If I'm going to an event, and it's someone that I've seen for like 6 months and I've interacted with and I know they're not a scumbag, then
you're not like lending your fucking Legacy decks to homeless guys on the way in and be like, oh, hey man, you want to come in and play? We need more players.
That's how we met.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you don't think I'm a scumbag. Let me use your
program. Yeah, oh, that's so nice.
Yeah, I appreciate the compliment.
I'm above scumbag status, so that's good.
Yeah, at least you've got that. Like, you can die with that. I'm not a scumbag. And that's good, though. Like, and you're absolutely right. Lending cards are, taking it further, like, you know, obviously not going to be giving away many Legacy staples, but, you know, that even gets into the general, like, you know, just in the Magic community altogether, you know, giving away cards that you don't need, that, you know, maybe just inexpensive little things or whatever, to get people interested in the game and to get people, you know, maybe interested in a format. Like, that's awesome. It's kind of what this community is built on, is, you know, there are some shitbags here and there, and you're always going to have to deal with them, but for the most part, the people in this community are great fucking people that are respectful people that want to learn this game, or they want to further themselves in this game. And you're absolutely right. You know, like, of course, the further you go, the deeper you go into the formats and how much more expensive they get, you've got to be a little bit more limited on what you're going to lend out to who, kind of thing. But, I mean, that's how people get there. You know,
I think it goes pretty far. I mean, this one guy that plays at FaZe quite a bit, he's a really nice kid, Ezak. He borrowed my lands deck on like several occasions, and like it has like beta duels and like Japanese foils, like Japanese foil dark depths, and like all this crazy stuff. And you know, he's like, yeah, man, I'll borrow your lands deck. And I'm like, sure, no problem.
Yeah, let me borrow it. And that's awesome for you to be able to, like, you know, to do that, you know, to say, like,
that blows my fucking mind. Like, I have some, like, expensive cards and I lend them out, and I think that I'm crazy, but, like, Vaded Duels, bro, like, I can't even believe you let that thing come out of the house. Like, the first time you brought that to the shop and you were like, hey, I saw you, like, all full of deck. It was pretty cool. Like, I thought I'd bring you mine. I thought you'd, like it. Yeah. And you were, like, super nonchalant about it. And then handed me a fucking car.
Yeah. Hey, I got this.
And, like a decent car, too. Not, like, yeah. Not like Kelly's Honda Fit. Like a good car. Like a car, like...
Like a
like
real
only had, like... Like a used Beamer.
Yeah, like the yeah. Honda Fit, that's like a fucking motorcycle with a shell on it.
Right? he actually drags the Honda Fit behind his bicycle.
That's you know, it's probably the best way to do it, to be honest. Yeah. I don't know if I would get the Honda Fit and feel safe.
So,
anyway, I digress.
So the first interaction I had with, like, craziness in lending decks was when I went to that SCG and I played against Adam Barnello, who's a member of Team Channel Fireball, and he was playing Esper Deathblade, and he just played all Beta Duels or Foreign Black Border Duels, and everything he had was, like, the most insane, crazy, non-foil thing of foreign proportions I've ever seen in my life. And he's, like, riffle shuffling it and hands it to me, and I was like, please don't riffle shuffle my deck. It's got, like, old non-foil Bloodstained Mires, and I really, really like them. And he was like, yeah, no problem, like, super, super respectful, and he's like, shuffling away, he's like, this isn't even my deck, so I just borrowed it from somebody. And I just, like, from that moment on, I was like, okay, no one is ever touching my cards ever again in the history of time. But that's not actually the case, and that's not true, and people in our community, at least, the people that I know lend their used Beamer to their friend all the time to go to the store to get milk.
Yeah,
for fun. For the first time ever, I actually turned someone down, and they were like, I've been building a deck with them, and his name is Braden, and I have Jeskai Ascendancy built in Legacy. We've been messing around. And he's like, hey man, do you mind if I goldfish your deck? And I was like, dude, there's $5,000 in dual lands and fetch lands, and they're like, you're not allowed to play with it for fun.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, maybe if there's money on the line and you're playing a tournament, I'd think about letting you do it, but you're not.
And I was going to lend it to him, and that was the point. I was like, you know what, we'll build this deck, you go to this tournament, it'll be great. It never happened, but he's like, you might have a goldfish now, I can't let that.
Yeah.
I found it. That's my line. That's it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, if you're going to goldfish the deck, have him just fucking, have him print the cards out on paper.
Right.
Use proxies for goldfishing.
But I'll lend my shit to people, like, for events and tournaments, and I'll let my cards, you know, pseudo out of my sight, if you will.
As you're being one of those, what you were talking about earlier, the fucking undercover WotC employees that are fucking watching for cheaters. You're just fucking nonchalantly in disguise, walking around following the dude, making sure he's not shuffling your deck wrong.
I'm usually more excited about how they're doing because my decks are crazy. I only play mono Eldrazi, and actually, this brings us to a good point, because I know Aaron wanted to talk about Eldrazi in the format, and sort of, are they the best ever? Because I think they are.
The best ever? I mean,
damn Eldrazi.
I mean, I don't have an issue with any deck in the format, right? Like, I encourage people to play, like, whatever they want to play, but I think, as a longtime player, like, I think Eldrazi hits a little bit too close to Lodestone Golem Winter. And,
In Vintage, yeah.
So basically what happened was, when Lodestone Golem came out, so that was back in World Wake, the Vintage scenes used to be a lot bigger, right? Like, there used to be more people going out to, like, Vintage events.
Right.
And so Lodestone Golem got printed, and, for those people that don't know what Lodestone Golem does, it's a 4-mana, 5/3 artifact creature. And it says all non-artifacts cost one more. So with Mishra's Workshop, you can fire this thing out on turn one and, you know, effectively lock people down with, like, additional spheres and whatever. And so when that card got printed, it really hurt the Vintage community. Like, a lot of people left the game because of that, because it was just so draw dependent, right? So you have,
right,
like, the blue sets and all these shop decks on the other side of the spectrum, right? And, you know, shop deck gets to play, and they go turn one Lodestone Golem, or turn one Sphere, second turn Lodestone, and you're just totally locked out of the game, and you can't play,
right? Right.
And WotC has historically had a big problem with that in terms of decks, where,
yeah,
like, even in a high-power format like Vintage, they don't like it when the play versus the draw, like, basically determines whether you can win or lose. Because it's right. like, when Shops is on the draw, you have time to interact, right? Like, you can play your lands, mm-hmm. you can play your boxes, you can, you know, recall or do whatever, or cast anything, right? And then you have more of an opportunity to interact with the Shops player is doing. So WotC just has always had a big problem with that kind of mentality with the format where draw go is super important, right?
Right.
And I think Eldrazi, like, in the format right now, like, it's not oppressive by any means, but I think if it was just a notch higher in power level, I think they would have to do something. And that kind of upsets me because I don't like when a format is dependent on the draw versus the play.
Yeah.
And I also like that Chalice of the Void exists in the meta, like for certain decks, you know, like a lot of legacy decks play Chalice of the Void to fight blue decks, right?
Mm.
But Eldrazi, you're not really taking a deck construction cost to play those cards. So when you get
right.
to play that on turn one and you're on the play, then it's so much different if you're on the draw, and it's kind of unsettling for the format, because like right. I like Chalice of the Void as a card. I like it as an effective measure to stop blue decks doing broken things, right? But it's like there's not much of a deconstruction cost to playing that in Eldrazi. So I mean, of course, you run four Chalice of the Void in a certain number of forms.
You actually get rewarded for playing Eldrazi by getting to play Chalice.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like
yeah.
because you play Eldrazi, congratulations, you've unlocked Secret Mode. You get to play. Chalice. Now, I was actually thinking about this earlier, and maybe Michael can answer this too. Any deck that plays four Ancient Tomb, four City of Traders is pretty much a lock to be a Chalice deck. Is that yeah. fair to say?
No.
Those like 12 cards, like that's the achievement unlocked, is if you play four City, four Ancient Tomb, you get to play four Chalice.
Well, the other big option.
You can show.
Yeah, Aaron's saying Sneak and Show, and the other big option is if you run like Lotus Petals or any other like one mana fast mana, then you can be like try to land a three mana big spell. So like Blood Moon, Trinisphere, Show and Tell, any of those payoff spells for three mana is the other option.
Yeah, and so I've tried playing a deck that leans on all types of those fast mana and it actually essentially just tries to abuse Chalice, and I couldn't actually imagine what it would be like to actually play in a meta that was dominated by Lodestone Golem and power. I can't imagine how oppressive that would be, and it totally makes sense to me that would dissuade people from even wanting to play.
Yeah, because I mean, like, the thing was, like, when that card came out, like, you could play all the artifact hate you wanted in the sideboard, right? But, like, yeah. like before Lodestone Golem, like, Shops was, like, a tier 2.5, 2 deck. You know, people played, like, Smokestacks and Tangle Wires and whatever. But, like, Lodestone Golem just pushed it way over the top, right? Because, like, it doesn't matter if every card in your hand is destroy target artifact, you can't actually cast them, right?
Right.
Because you're being, like, locked down from Spheres and Lodestone Golems. And it's like, sort of like it's obviously not the same power level in Legacy, but it's sort of similar in the respect that, like what Mike was just saying with like the Blood Moon decks and like the first turn Blood Moon, first turn Trinisphere or whatever, like those decks have existed forever, but they're like crazy clunky, right? Like,
yeah,
you know, you have to have like, you know, three perfect pieces in your hand, and it's like sometimes you can't do anything after the Blood Moon lands because you're not drawing lands. But like with Eldrazi, it's bordering a little bit too close, because it's like, you know, when all your high level cards are like 3, 4, 5 mana up to Reality Smasher, it's like, you know, going turn one Chalice of the Void, turn two Thought Not Seer is like a pretty easy thing to achieve. You know, it's not like your deck's going to screw you that much, right?
No, it's awesome. That's again like the reward you get for playing the lands that you do, and sort of the only punishing thing is you have to play multiple legendary lands, and that's really not that bad, right?
But I mean, the other punishment is that you don't get to play basic lands, really. So you're very susceptible to wastelands, which is like yep. one of the only saving graces, right? Like if they could also play basics for some reason, then the deck would be like stupid, out of control.
I agree with that too, because I played Landsill for a very long time, and like in Vintage, wasteland doesn't see as much play as it does in Legacy, just because so many people have like Moxes and all this stuff, right? Like, the only decks that really play Wasteland are, like, you know, your Shops decks, your Merfolk decks, Landsill, and, like, you know, a couple other fringe strategies, right? So shop decks aren't used to getting their land screwed with, right? You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Like, cause people aren't playing Wasteland, but once shop decks play against like a Wasteland style deck, you can really see their like mana start to fall apart, right? Cause like, you know, you Wasteland or Workshop and then they're kind of locked under their own spheres and they can't do things. So it's kind of the same thing with Eldrazi too. It's like, you know, if you can screw with their lands, like they can just fall completely down, right?
Yep.
I'm lost. We expected this to happen. It's just because I don't know enough about the Legacy format. Like, I feel like the only thing I have gleaned a bunch of information from this already, and we're not even
okay. Yet.
But I feel like what we should have done, Tony, is just done like a Legacy primer first for me.
Let's put this into the perspective of a burn player, like the Eldrazi deck from the eyes of a burn player. So
there you go.
Stupid spaghetti monsters
are getting played and they have nothing to do with what I want to do.
Except that they're fueling your Price of Progresses, because everything they play is fuel for Price of Progress.
Yes.
And
true.
And they have to play a ton of lands. Mm-hmm. And then the thing that makes you sad is when they turn one Chalice on one you, so you can't play any of your spells.
Yeah, then you're fucked. And then like they've got all the time in the world to maybe get that Chalice on two if depending on your build, and then you're just locked out of the game and it's awful.
Yeah, there you go. And that's how we all feel about Eldrazi, except for Tony.
I love this deck. We'll talk more about it later, maybe in person, but I'm definitely gonna try a Mono Blue Stifle Knot version with Elder Deep Fiend, because getting to power that guy out and just tap down people's lands as a cast trigger seems pretty good. Let's cast your Reality Smashers.
That totally seems like a good idea. I think that's probably your best bet.
this leads to like Legacy is actually a really great place to brew decks. If you've played Legacy for
best.
Like a year, there's definitely tons of room to brew, and you can win with the decks too.
The other thing too that is really, really exciting for us lucky face-to-face goers is we have a consistent Legacy crowd. Not everyone gets that, and the card prices between Magic Online and paper are absurd. They don't make any sense. Can you please explain this to me, to someone who I don't play Magic Online, let alone Magic Online Legacy? So
I sold my collection a long time ago. But yeah, there's never been any real answer to that question. Like the price discrepancies are fucking insane. It's ridiculous.
Let's talk about Rishadon port online. I just don't get that.
Yeah, that's how much is it?
It's like $200. You can get a paper one for like, you know, around 100 or so. And online,
it's not even fucking real thing.
Not even the real thing.
I see
$200.
So the reason that port's so expensive is that it was only printed in one set a long time ago. And to give you a perspective on how difficult it is to acquire ports online, you can't make a trade that costs more than 100 tickets in one go. So you actually have to do it over 3 transactions for one card.
That's
like,
insane.
It's just, so it's so silly. What ends up happening is that Death and Taxes just isn't really a thing in Legacy Online, and neither is Lands. You don't see any of those two decks. And the decks that they prey on, like Storm, for example, to a certain extent, decks that they prey on are allowed to live. So.
Yeah, because it's just essentially so much of a pain in the ass to put the deck together.
Yeah.
People aren't willing to do it. And that's one thing, I mean, that lends to the fact that, like, you know, back when I used to, like, that was my main fucking playtime was on Modo before I gave up on it. You know, of course it was in Modern, but it's same idea, like, just the metagames are different. Like, it you know, for whatever reasons, the metagames tend to, it works a lot faster on Modo. The metagame evolves differently on Modo because you're getting in so many more rounds and so many more, like, you know, basically, like, whether it's tournament practice or you're getting in it, you're playing daily, whatever, like, the shit evolves so much faster, so it changes the metagame. So it's like, you know, it's two separate realities, essentially. And so you've got cards that are like all, I mean, yeah, it's top tier deck, it's a fucking decently expensive card, alright, cool, fine, in paper, but it's like the hotness this week on Modo.
And so it goes out. And then, like, you know, what we've all learned a million times is, like, that fucking, I forget the term for it. But basically, when a card goes up for any fucking reason, it never comes all the way back down. Like, price memory. There we go. You know, it never comes all the way back down. So that just essentially happens so much faster on Moto. And then when you add in shit like, you know, with the ports, like, just not being able to trade them in a single transaction makes it more of a pain in the ass. Makes them essentially more rare, can drive the price up too, and it's just, it's a whole different fucking marketplace, and it's ridiculous, you know. Because again, it at least, like, with the paper cards, you have them in your hands. It's insane. The ridiculous prices for some cards on Moto that are just like, what? For the digital version of it? Are you kidding me? No.
Yeah, Misdirection was like that for a long time before, Conspiracy.
But it also, it makes me think of possibly somewhat of an explanation for it. It's exactly what you were just saying a minute ago, Tony, is, you know, like, you guys are fortunate. You have a big legacy community in, at Face to Face. I don't at all whatsoever where I'm at. You know, I absolutely zero legacy fucking players around.
I'll just say one thing because I moved to Toronto about close to a year ago. Like, I was I was living on the East Coast on Prince Edward Island. You know, you probably don't even know where that is, but
I'm the goddamn geography major on this podcast.
You don't have to answer that. Anyways, yeah. So I mean, just to give my perspective on that, back when I was living in Prince Edward Island, I didn't even play Modern, right? Like, I didn't even get into Modern until, like, maybe a year ago. Like, all we did was just, you know, play Eternal formats. And tournaments, like, Legacy and, like, all that stuff, like, they only came around, like, maybe, like, once a month. You know, you get together and you play 12-man tournaments, and sometimes they had, like
the same 12 people.
Yeah, like the same 12 people, but they had like bigger tournaments in Halifax, like they had like charity tournaments with like 30, 40 people, so those were nice. But, you know, when I came to Toronto, it was like, sweet, I get to do this like every week, like I feel so spoiled, you know? And it's not like just people playing with like budget decks and like people that don't know what they're doing. I mean, people are, you know, over at Face, they're getting like, you know, 20, 25 people playing like legitimate decks and like they know what they're doing. And like you get like new players too, but I mean, it's good because nobody in the community is like, you know, an asshole who's like, you know, discouraging the new player. Like, people are willing to help out these people, and it's like, hey, you know, like.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, if you got a room full of new players, as an experienced player, it could kind of be a pain in the ass. Like, you know, and of course, you know, if you're a decent person, you're like, ah, you know what, I'm going to make the best of this, and I'm going to just, you know, try to help them along. But, I mean, of course, you're there to compete, and you're there to play, but, like, you know, you've got a cross-section of it. You've got experienced players. You've got newer players. And so you kind of tutor along the new players while you're able to get in that fix of being able to play some fucking really good Magic against fucking, you know, experienced players. And that's also, but that's what I'm getting at is, like, you know, maybe some of that Moto price disparity comes from that, too, is the fact that, like, I don't have that here. You know, I've got Just Imagine, which is barely a card store, and that's it for, you know, at least 100 miles. And so I'm stuck with that. So if I want it, like, if I want to play Legacy, I either have to get my friends to play it and come over and just play Legacy at my house in no competitive fashion whatsoever, but just like hang out, we're going to drink and fucking play some Magic, or I have to fucking drive 100 miles plus to go play, and maybe if I could find a Legacy tournament every 6 months, or I could play on Moto whenever the fuck I want to. So it's, I mean, I guess that kind of, you know, maybe that's a reason for some of the Legacy cards being fucking stupid on Moto, is like, I mean, that's some people, that's the only way they can get it.
One of my big suggestions for people who like want to play Legacy is just proxy up a couple decks, invite some friends over, drink beers, and just play and like switch decks and stuff. It's super fun, and who cares? We're just like sitting around a kitchen table.
Yeah, you're just sitting around, fucking around, and having a good time. Yeah, like I did that
the other night, and I had never had so much fun fizzling with Storm in my entire life.
No, and it, like, that's awesome. It's one of those things where, like, you know, like Daniel, my brother-in-law, and I, we'll get it. Our format, I guess you would call it, we've kind of gone back and forth. Like, we normally will just play Modern. He'll come over, we'll fucking jam Modern. And That's what we do. And then we got to a point where we're like, oh, you know, we're sitting here in my bar playing fucking, just playing Magic against each other. Like, you know, we should, like, probably, instead of spending all the money on, like, some of these more expensive cards that we'd like to play, you know, maybe we should just proxy some of those in. We went through a little period where it ran fucking completely rampant, and so it was like, oh, well, I mean, shit, if I'm going to print up any of these cards, I might as well just print up all these fucking cards. And we went apeshit with it for a while, and then it got less fun. We were like, oh, well, I mean, we're pretty much just printing up whatever we want, and half our fucking decks are, you know, proxies. So we're like, all right, oh, hold on, let's kind of put a fucking kibosh on that. Let's not do that anymore for a while, because it just made shit way less fun. And then we got to a point where we were playing, like, our own version of Legacy, where it's like, oh, we're playing Modern decks with Legacy cards, but we're not, like, you know, we're just playing against each other, so I'm not going to go out and spend fucking thousands of dollars on some of these cards. So it's like, he's all, oh, I've got two copies of Jace, and I'm going to play those, too, in my deck. And I'm like, all right, well, I had some face credit, so I bought Chain Lightnings and Price Progress. Like,
yeah, that's like, you know, yeah. That's like my dream.
And so,
like, dream. If I could play Jace in a modern deck, oh man.
Yeah, which is essentially what we were doing. So we're like, ah, oh, we're playing modern decks with, like, Legacy rules. We're just not, like, playing with, which, I mean, that ended pretty quickly too for exactly what you're talking about. I got really sick of just staring at Jace, being like, you son of a bitch, I don't want to fucking, this is no fun. Cause again, like, we're just hanging out having fun, and that stopped being fun real quick. So we just recently went back to, like, all right, we got no more fucking Legacy cards, and we're gonna go back. We're going back to Modern because it's getting stupid, and I'm really sick of just staring Jace in the face, going like, "Well, fuck," and it's terrible. Like, there's every once in a great while, Jace hits the table, and I've still got such a, like, you know, such a good leg up that I can win the game. But most of the time, it just fucking ends. And
I have an unhealthy love for that card.
I get it. I understand it. Like, I have a fucking, I have a healthy respect for how much I hate that card. But, like, you know, we've kind of run that gambit. And again, this is, it might be foreign to you guys because you do have a bit bigger player base. I live in California, but I live in the desert of California. So it's not like we don't have shit for game stores here, and we don't have many players. And so, like, getting into that side of it, like, oh, hey, we'll just, you know, in our own little circle, we'll allow, you know, kind of whatever, you know, like, Legacy cards are fine because we both kind of have an agreement, like, nah, we're not going to go fucking ape shit, because if I went out and spent fucking, you know, I sold a car and bought a Legacy deck, to play against my brother-in-law, he's going to be like, well, this is not fun, I'm not going to come over anymore. So it's worked out well, you know, with the two of us playing or the couple other people that'll come over. But I do like the idea of, to play the format and to fuck with the format. Like, not just be like, oh, hey, we could throw some Legacy cards in here, or we do just proxying up an entire deck of,
yeah,
you know,
yeah, one up
a few decks.
And one option is to invite some friends over and, like, print out 8 decks and then assign a random deck to each person, play an 8-man tournament, and then redistribute the decks after that.
And then do it, yeah, you redistribute it. Yeah, I get you. See,
that's super fun. That's super fun.
I got 8 people to play, but
we could probably 4, whatever.
We probably do it with 4.
Well, I mean, speaking of, like, this gateway drug of Modern into Legacy, what are some of the cards? Do you guys want to talk about some cards that maybe, like, feel like they're powerhouses in Modern but don't fit into Legacy? I think we have a bit of a short list here, but the feeling of the cards are sort of the same.
Yeah, because if you play a lot of Modern, like, what makes Modern really powerful, there's, like, cards like Lightning Bolt, Tarmogoyf, Thoughtseize, like, those cards are really, like, Modern cards. And some of those carry over to Legacy, like Lightning Bolt, Thoughtseize, Goyf, those are still Legacy cards. But some don't make it.
Right.
Like, Cryptic Command, for example. Mm-hmm. No one has ever played that in Legacy.
Right.
Not once. Not one time. I think there's a better four mana blue spell.
Well, because you basically you have so many better options.
Okay, Aaron, what are the better options?
I was just about to start to comment that Remand is actually Vintage playable, and I've actually been blown out by that card in Vintage before. because
that's crazy.
Mental misstep is so prevalent, right? So I think I was, no, my opponent was trying to cast an Ancestral, and so I tried to misstep it, and then he remands his Ancestral back to his hand and casts it again. I was pretty salty about that.
Ew.
But, yeah, it's pretty gross. Powerhouses in Modern. I think like Electrolyze is like a ridiculous card in Modern, but it's like, it's like unplayable in Legacy. Like, how are you ever paying 3 mana for that?
Yeah, no one would ever.
Yeah, and I guess that's the limit to Modern is like, alright, well, we got the next best spell. And then, you know, even though it might be a powerhouse in Modern, it's not going to do shit when you have access to that many more spells.
And like, conversely, something like Spell Pierce is a total Legacy card that maybe one deck in Modern plays in the sideboard.
Yeah, Merfolk.
That is true. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy how that works out.
Yeah, so cards like Spell Pierce and, like, we have, in Modern we play Mana Leak, but in Legacy we get Counterspell, so, like, those are just almost a strict upgrade. But, like, Path to Exile is another good example. That's a card that is everywhere in Modern. If you play white, you play Path to Exile. And in Legacy, right, we get to play Swords to Plowshare.
Right. That's actually interesting because in Legacy, aren't a lot of the decks like shy on basics?
Sort of, except we're all aware of Wasteland. And so we either go like a Delver deck will play no basics in all duels, or if it can afford to, it will play some number of basics.
Actually, Path to Exile has actually been seeing more Legacy play recently just because of Eldrazi. Like, I've seen a lot of Death and Taxes sideboards with, like, a pair of Path to Exiles in the sideboard just to have additional creature removal. But,
As someone who plays Eldrazi, if my Death and Taxes cast that against me, that would be far superior to Swords to Plowshares. On top of, mind you, not having six of them post-board. Yeah. That card is quite good against a lot of decks that don't have basics. And again, sometimes maybe you feed them basics, but I guess the risk versus reward, you try and minimize that gap in Legacy, and you only do things when you have to.
It's pretty good against lands too, being able to path Merit Leash, as opposed to giving them 20 life
seems
with
fine.
Swords.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
The other card is one of the few Delver of Secrets though. Like Delver of Secrets is like such a weak card in Modern, in my opinion. Like, nobody plays with Delver when you just have, like, you know, more fast and efficient creatures, whereas, like, in Legacy, it's, you know, obviously, like, a tier one strategy.
Yeah. I mean, well, Delver's seen its day in Modern, like, you know, and maybe that has to do with, you know, cards that have been printed, like, just the fact that, like, those formats are entities unto themselves. You know, Delver has definitely seen its day in Modern and done well, but then, you know, you lose a card or another card comes in and all of a sudden it shuts it off or it turns it on. And that can completely change how, you know, whether it's a viable fucking strategy or not.
It feels like the Delver deck, the blue red Delver deck in Modern is almost exclusively separated by Price of Progress. I mean, like, obviously Daze and Force of Will are the other two big cards that separate blue red Delver, in Legacy versus Modern, but if there was some sort of Price of Progress like effect, you could manipulate the other light counter spells and Delver might be good, but there just isn't quite good enough.
Treasure Cruise come back. God damn it.
Oh god damn, no. No. I mean,
the
I would play
that
Jeskai's Tendency,
that is
your god.
That
no.
is the only fucking blue card I have ever fucking religiously played. Like, I'm very not a blue player, but I was just all, hell yeah, I'll play blue.
Actually, this is a good opportunity for me to ask you guys' opinion. Aaron, what do you think of the card Bedlam Reveler? In general, but as this sort of like potential draw three that gets around some of the classic counter spells like Spell Pierce and Flusterstorm and things we've talked about.
I'm seriously thinking about buying a playset of those and just fucking checking them out. I probably wouldn't run four no matter what. But I mean, from what I remember, they're pretty fucking cheap. You kind of sold me on that.
Yeah, what's your thoughts, Aaron?
Are we talking about Legacy or in Modern?
Just in general, but maybe start with Legacy because that's our focus.
I actually played against someone who is running those in Modern though. It seemed pretty good in Modern. I mean, like, it's hard to counter, and you know, it just gives you so much more tempo. And Legacy, I'm not too sure about, just because, like usually for like a burn strategy, you want to close the game out faster than putting that thing online. But I could see it in Modern for sure.
Michael, what do you think?
I think that card is like when it first came out, my gut instinct was that it would be banned in 6 months somewhere.
Yeah, we talked about it. Yeah.
And I feel like people just aren't adventurous enough. Like in Modern, it's tricky because people tend to, all the brewers tend to just be bad, for the most part. Mm. And then in Legacy, there's a lot of room to brew, but it's like much more isolated and it's harder to spread good ideas. So I think it's going to take a while before, it catches on, but it seems so good.
Yeah,
it seems so good. 2 mana, can't be Spell Pierce, can't be Foster Storm. Draw 3 cards, and it leaves you with a 3/4.
Yeah.
3/4 prowess.
Yeah,
3/4 prowess in a deck that just plays fucking in sorceries for the most part.
And the thing that I really like about this card is it doesn't have diminishing returns, as in the fourth one you cast is still only 2 mana, which is really, really sweet, something that a lot of the really powerful devil spells don't have going for them. And the other thing I like about Bedroom Reveler is when I first look at it, I like to assess cards when they first come out just like based on each individual part of the card and how it stacks up to other cards that are currently like that. So one of my cards that I started evaluating like this was Monastery Swift Spear. And people were saying, is it the new Goblin Guide? Isn't it the new Goblin Guide? And I think time's proven that it's actually replaced Goblin Guide in a lot of decks. Yeah. And this being a creature that has power and toughness, so I equated Monastery Swift Spear to it had the haste of Goblin Guide, it had the power and toughness of Deathrite Shaman, and it had the ability of something else that was really insane that was prowess at the time. Maybe, anyways, don't remember. But Bedlam Reveler has the power and toughness equal to Restoration Angel, which is an insane card. It draws you 3 cards like Ancestral Visions, and then it has prowess, now we can say, like Monastery Swift Spear. So I think this card has a lot of potential to just be busted at some point.
I like, you guys are talking about Monastery Swift Spear. I played Burn for a while in Legacy. I hate Swift Spear so much. I don't want that card in my deck at all.
Really?
Yeah.
I've always had success with it.
I mean, it's
powerful. Don't get me wrong. I contrary to what Tony was saying, I personally would rather just run guides. I'm running both of them in my Burn deck, my Modern Burn deck. But like I think it's good, but I would rather run guides.
So tell me, you're talking about Legacy, Michael, right?
Sorry. Yeah.
Yes, I'm talking about Legacy.
Okay, so and this argument differs between Modern and Legacy. Yeah, so tell me why you hate it in Legacy, because I think I agree with you that I don't like it in Legacy.
Yeah. Okay. So I interjected too quick, sorry.
Yeah, so in Legacy I don't want to be playing creatures basically at all. I want to be playing things that like will immediately damage them, and yes, Swift Spear has haste, but like it's just, there's lots of times where you'll top deck it and it won't do anything. Mm. Whereas, like, Eidolon always does something.
Right.
If it resolves, they're taking damage.
Right.
So, I'd rather play, like, the 4 Eidolons, 4 Goblin Guides, and then just burn. Like,
yeah.
don't worry about creatures. Don't worry, like, don't give them the outs of having blockers.
Just go absolutely. Which is, you know, like, even that's kind of continues into the struggle in Modern is, like, is finding the efficiency of, you know, of course I'd like to have all 1 mana 3-to-the-face spells, but I don't. Like there's not enough of them to, you know, fill out the deck. So, you know, you've got to start putting the next most efficient way to get damage across. And like, you know, I find myself end up like playing, I guess substandard cards that it's like, it's not as good, but I mean, it's not Tier 1, not in the sense of the deck, but it, like, of the construction of the deck. It's not one of those auto-include cards. Yeah, it's one of those, alright, well, I guess this is the next fucking step. You know, of course, when you get into Legacy, you've got access to a couple more of those. So, you can cut those creature slots. But, I mean, that's, like, that's the fucking point of Burn anyway, is you I mean, you do want something there in case you run into that deck that, you know, can shut you out, like can shut your burnout. You might be able to run the long game, but for the most part, you don't want to deal with creatures. You don't want to have them, like you said, having the outs of blocking, shit like that. You want to just put the burn across their face as fast as you can and get it over with. And so, like, that's where, as, like, my modern burn deck has become more clogged with creatures because there's only so many good, like, really good burn spells out there.
Yeah, yeah. You want, in modern, you really, like, your best spell is Atarka's Command, which is a 2-mana, yes, 5-damage spell.
Yes.
And you really want to be able to take advantage of that as much as you can.
Yes, absolutely.
And it, yeah, I think Bedlam Reveler is going to eternally be held back in Legacy by that exact thing. It's a creature, therefore it's a liability. Mm-hmm. But I think the thing that it actually has potential in is in Modern by being actually a sizable creature. It's bigger than Wild Akado,
yeah,
costs very similar to the same amount of mana. It's just got a bunch of signs on it that says this card has potential. And I think the biggest problem with Bedlam Reveler right now is it's just being overshadowed by Death Shadow, which is ironic.
I think you can't run four of those in a deck, though, just because, like, how miserable is it to, like, look at your opening hand and see, like, three of those guys and,
you're
like, uncastable?
Like,
it's like, why am I playing with this again? But, I mean, like, in Modern, I could see it, like, definitely as, like, one or two of, or maybe in, like, the sideboard where you know, like, a matchup's going to go long.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's like, you need some way to refuel. So, I mean, I could definitely see that.
And it doesn't have diminishing returns. So, I mean, like, if you do ever get to cast the second one, it's not really going to be that much harder than casting the first one. It's just the challenge is getting bogged down with them and drawing them at the wrong time and having them become awkward. Exactly. Yeah, something that's meant to go a little bit longer, and maybe that's what the current modern Delvern strategy is looking for. You know, to be able to stop the early quick combo decks with the light counter magic that we have access to, and then be able to go long with something like this.
Yeah. I do like it. You definitely have me sold on it. I've got to buy some. Like, I, you know, just haven't put a card order together yet. But I that's the next thing that's going in the burn deck to just kind of try it out and see.
All right, so we were on the topic of cards that didn't quite make it from
Modern to Legacy.
Is there anything that you can think of, Aaron? I know Michael and I made a little list here, but...
Well, I'll tell you one card that really surprised me recently, how good it is. And, like, I've actually convinced a lot of, like, Miracles players to start playing their sideboard, especially with Death and Taxes becoming prevalent, is Kozilek's Return. That card is unreal in Legacy.
Okay, so where are the points that it hits on? Like, why? Like, it's colorless, so that's good because...
That's the only thing that matters.
Okay, and why does that matter? I sort of understand, but explain to Kevy maybe like why that is so important that it A, that it's red, but B, that it's colorless.
Well, because like we were just talking about in Death and Taxes, one of their big defensive tools is Mother of Runes, right? So, you know, it's one white mana for a 1/1. You tap it, give a creature you control protection from the color of your choice until end of turn, right? So it's really hard to use effects like Pyroclasm or like Lightning Bolts to kill their creatures, right? Because they can just activate Mother of Runes in response, you know, give their creature protection from red, and then you basically have to 2-for-1 yourself to kill any of their creatures, right? Whereas like Kozilek's Return, you just cast it, and since it's colorless, you just wrath their board, basically.
And that's all you care about. You're not playing Eldrazi. There's no secret mode here where you're casting like a Worldbreaker later to get more value. Just the fact that it's 2 damage, colorless, instant spell is just the nut.
That's kind of why I like it too, Tony, is just because, like, it's obviously, like, an Eldrazi-themed card, and you're playing it out of, like, a blue-white control deck, so you have, like, all this, like, bullshit Eldrazi text on it, and it's just like, yeah, I don't care about any of that, I'm just looking for an instant speed, colorless spell.
Yeah, and Volcanic Fall, it says, can't be countered, but it still suffers from being red, but it's also double red, so the fact that this is 2-mana instant speed for only a single red mana is just, like, exactly what we're looking for. I remember when this card got spoiled. Do you guys remember your first impression of this card? Michael, do you?
Kozilek's Return?
Yeah.
Is that what
you... Like a mythic sweeper? Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, so I saw it through the lens of Red Green Tron, which plays Pyroclasm and also Big Spaghetti Monsters, so was considering both halves of it. And I'm of the mind that Kozilek's Return has no spot in Red Green Tron, but I know a lot of players really like it there.
See, I thought it would break Tron. Like, I thought it would be unreal in that. Like, I don't play Tron or I don't know anything about Tron, but I thought it would be unreal in that deck.
Yeah,
it might actually. I feel like it might actually be able to if you still had Eye of Ugin to be able to search for your big fatty when you needed to.
Yeah, I mean, we have Sanctum of Ugin, which finds your big fatty for you. But the problem is, if you're casting fatties, your fatties will just win you the game, and you don't need some extra bonus like setup thing to do it.
So this is like a win more.
It feels a lot like that. The only thing that like doesn't make it win more is that you can use Ancient Stirrings to find it. So you can use it early game, you can Stirrings to try to find it and stabilize. So that you can't do with Pyroclasm.
And it's easy to cast. It's why you as a Red Green Tron player can't play Anger of the Gods or Volcanic Fallout, correct?
Exactly.
Like having the one mana spell has been huge to its accessibility and probably, in my opinion, what made it mythic.
Oh, it's not a mythic spell. It's totally not a mythic spell. Like
it is mythic.
It's not. I mean, it is in the sense of like its little box is purple or whatever, but it should be a rare spell or like uncommon or whatever, right?
That goes great. I love that.
Uncommon, amazing. That's funny. Well, I mean, like I said, I've been looking at some of the Emerge Eldrazi because, every single one of these Eldrazi cards has been a consideration in a format since they started releasing them. So I think everything's worth considering and maybe these Emerge cards are legit. Maybe not.
I've seen the Deep Fiend one is the one when it comes in, it taps four permanents.
It's a cast, but yeah, it taps four permanents.
Sure. That card is actually really very good, and like Gigadrowse, for example, that's the one blue with Replicate that just taps permanents. That card is very good and I think underplayed.
Like I just picture a game that gets to go, let's not even say turn one Chalice Magical Christmas Land, just like a turn two Mattery Shaper, turn three Elder Deep Fiend all your lands. Untap, play Reality Smasher, attack for 10. And then maybe you have stuff to do, or like even you play the turn 3 Elder Deep Fiend, untap, and then Thoughtmoth them because now they're totally vulnerable. It just feels like that being able to power that out in the Legacy format because you have so many of the Soul Lands, and Mattery Shaper is actually a good card, you're flipping over other cards that are helping your cause along, like, you know, Maybe it's two mana rocks or more Eldrazi mimics, or maybe a version like this has something like Phyrexian Revoker in the main deck. You know, because I've seen versions that play heavy on the aggressive Eldrazi version, but blue could be restrictive as a cost, but you don't have to emerge it. It's still an 8 mana tap down 4 lands, as long as you don't get wasteland out of the game.
Actually, speaking of Eldrazi, I have a pretty good Eldrazi story. It made me laugh quite a bit. I think I already told Mike this. You're both familiar with Rich Shea, right?
Yeah.
Rich Shea, vintage player. So anyway,
yeah, he's on Vintage Super League, and yeah. Yep.
Yeah, he's a great guy. But anyway, he's in like a chat group we have going that's like Miracles mostly. But we talk a lot about like Vintage or whatever.
Is that
so
the
anyway,
name of the group? Just Miracles mostly.
just Miracles. We switch the names up from now and then. It's usually stupid stuff, but shout out to those guys if any of those guys listen to the podcast. But anyway, so we were talking about Vintage, and Rich, he was playing in the Vintage Super League, and he didn't really know what to play. So I'm like, oh, play my Landsteel deck, and he's like, yeah, sure. He took a look at it. He's like, yeah, it looks pretty good. I'm just gonna make like one change, and he put you know how Landsteel works? Do you, Kevin?
What's that?
Like the Landsteel deck? Do you know how? The Landsteel deck.
Okay, so
the idea behind Landsteel is you play the card Standstill, which is one in the blue, and it says, it's like who blinks first, right? If you cast a spell before I do, then I get to draw 3 cards and vice versa, right?
Ah.
Right, so it's like breaking the Standstill, right? So the idea behind the deck is you have these man lands that you can attack and, you're forcing your opponent to eventually break the standstill because you're just not doing anything but attacking with your man lands, right?
Right, right.
So anyway, that's the idea behind land still. So the whole deck is like counter spells and removal and standstills and man lands, right?
Right.
So anyway, decide to put an Emrakul, the Promised End, in the sideboard, right? So he's playing as his opponent on when he was playing the Vintage Super League, and he was just, you know, land go, land go, land go, land go, because no one's going to break the standstill, right? So he just like, okay, well, screw it, I'm going to break the standstill. He pays all the mana, because he had, you know, there's a million lands in play from his draw go. And he casts Emrakul, the Promised End, and, you know, standstill triggers, so his opponent gets to draw three cards. Okay, let's go to your turn. Oh, your hand's Ancestral Recall, and, you know, with all these, like, crazy cards, you can really screw up someone's game and Bennett, right? Like, you know, you can, you know, Ancestral your opponent and, you know, play this Force of Will. And I just thought it was the most hilarious thing. Like, it was the most random thing. Like, I, you know, I'm just not creative enough to come up with something like that by myself, right?
To play Drago until you hit to Emrakul, the Promised End? That's insane.
Yeah, because
Ancestral says target player draws three cards, right? So that's right, just Blowout Central.
But, like, I just can't think on a level where it's like, okay, I'm going to break my own standstill to cast this thing and, you know, like your deck.
So when I cast Emrakul, the Promised End, I control both players during the turn?
No.
You always control yourself, and then on their turn.
Exactly, yeah. So I could, like, have a counter war with myself, and...
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
And then, you could really, really punish someone for not casting spells against you for 8 turns.
Oh, it's insane, because it's not like Standard, where it's like, you know, you can really screw someone up in Standard, but, like, sometimes you just don't have the tools to do that. You know, they have, like, 4 creatures in hand, and you can't really do a whole lot.
Yeah.
But, like, Vintage, you can just, like, create these, like, counter wars, because all the cards, like, are so inherently powerful that you can just, you know, create these, like, counter wars with yourself and, you know, just devastate your hand, right?
That's insane. Yeah. That's kind of cool. I like that.
I play with Mindslaver and Modern in my Tron deck. Mm-hmm. And one of my favorite moments was when I took control of a Scapeshift player and beat them game 1 because they didn't pay their pact while I was controlling them. And then game 2.
Oh, amazing!
Yeah. So, and then game 2, I took control of them and Scapeshifted to kill themselves. And it involved a line where they Scapeshift for their Stomping Grounds, which Scapeshift says comes into play tapped. But you get them to pay the 2 life anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So we call a judge over, and I ask the judge, can you pay for Stomping Ground, like, through Scapeshift, even if it comes into play tapped? And he looks at me and says, yes, with a clear, like, but you don't want to do this. And, like, no, I've got him mindslavered. So he's like, oh, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, definitely go right ahead.
Mindslaver.
He's just all, man, why would you want to? I get you.
Yeah, they have to answer the question that you ask them.
Yeah.
And if you ask them a question like, can I pay the 2 life? The answer is yes, but it's kind of misleading because it won't do anything.
Right. Yes, you can pay the 2 life, but, yeah.
Do you have any other questions?
Oh, I love it. That's funny.
Okay, what are some other sort of, sweet moments? Aaron, do you have any highlights from your Legacy career? Have you played any deck other than something that has Tundras in it?
I mean, lands. Lands doesn't play Tundras.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, that's fair.
It's fair.
Have you been, like, pretty solid? I guess I haven't asked you this, like...
You haven't asked me what?
I just haven't asked you, like, how long you've been playing these decks for, right?
Like, the way I am as a player is I like to religiously stick to, like, one deck and just, you know, master it, like, just over and over and over. Like, I just don't get tired of playing the same deck. Like, you know, I've been playing, like, you know, blue control decks for, like, the last 10 years, so it's just, I don't know, it's in my blood, I guess. But, I don't know, it's just always interesting to me.
I don't know. Well, I'm just gonna put you on the spot then. Do you have any, like, interesting moments? I know you said your highlight from the GP, but like crazy Legacy-specific interactions?
Legacy-specific interactions. I remember at Grand Prix New Jersey, actually. So this was during Treasure Cruise, right? So, you know, Blue Red Delver was the deck to beat at that tournament, right? Because everyone was playing 4 times Treasure Cruise and all that stuff. And seems I was good. Playing, I was, yeah, it was pretty good. So I decided to play lands in that tournament because, like no one was playing around Wasteland. Everyone was just trying to play these greedy mana bases where, you know, all they wanted to do was cast Treasure Cruise over and over again. So they weren't playing around Wasteland or whatever. So it was a pretty solid choice for that tournament. I made day two. I think I was the second last surviving lands player. But I was playing a Chains of Mephistopheles in the sideboard, and my opponent had a Sylvan Library in play, and it's like, I'm not even going to begin to explain how those two cards interact.
But the short answer is it's very bad for the person.
It's very bad. Like the short answer is call a judge. Like if that ever happens, call a judge. So we did. So we both called a judge, and so you know, judge came over and he said, "What's going on?" And he just like looks at the table and he's like, "Oh, I understand. Just hold on, I'm gonna go get the head judge."
I'm gonna make this someone else's problem.
Yeah, so he had to go get the head judge to sort it all out, and he had to like supervise the rest of the game to make sure like all the cards were being drawn in the right sequence. It was kind of a cute moment, I guess, but.
That's one of those stories you hear people say, and you're like, oh, imagine this interaction and like being around a shop and maybe some commander players and stuff, and you're like, legit, that was you firsthand.
Yeah, like, it's definitely one of those, like, stories that's, like, cliched. It's, like, stifling a standstill trigger. You know, it's, like, things, like, stupid stuff that happens in Legacy.
I once saw a standstill player, and he was playing against another blue player, and the opponent goes to stifle the standstill trigger, and the standstill player doesn't really understand their deck very well, so they try to counter the stifle, and then the other player stifles on top of it, and so everyone's missing these standstill triggers, and eventually they realize it, and a judge walks over. It's like, yeah, you guys just missed all of these triggers. So
so move on.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So Sylvan Library and Chains is like one of those like classic things that you don't ever want to see in the format just because it's like call a judge. That's all you have to do is just call a judge.
Yeah. I think my favorite legacy moment that I've been part of is Legacy Dredge is a weird deck. It's hard to interact with, but one of the like legitimate win strategies against it is to deck it. Just like keep answering their threats. They'll dredge 6 or 10 every turn, and then after like 6 turns, they just run out of cards in their library.
Right.
So, I'm playing against it, and I keep wastelanding my own Dryad Arbor to exile all their Bridge from Below's.
Nice.
And then I just like will block with my Dryad Arbor and loan them back, and I staved them off just long enough, to deck them. It was sweet.
That actually comes up a lot in Miracles. Like, if you play the Dredge versus Miracles matchup, that actually happens a lot, where you just, like, terminus them over and over again, and then they can't dredge anymore.
Yeah, but you've got tools to deal with them. I my deck just is not well-suited to beat Dredge like that.
Yeah. I just actually remembered Eldrazi versus, well, I was playing Miracles versus, what's your buddy, Raymond Mitchell?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you saw that game, right?
No?
It was in the one.
No?
Yeah, I know you were hovering around. Maybe you didn't see the whole thing, but that was moment where, because what happened was, I had turn 4 Moat and turn 5 Jace, and I just immediately started, like, Fate Sealing them. So when I was Fate Sealing them, I saw a bunch of Warping Whales. Right, so I let him keep those because I had a mode in place, so, you know, he could never attack me. And I saw an All Is Dust when I was Fate Sealing him, and I'm like, okay, well, that can go to the bottom. So I was thinking to myself, like, what are the odds? You know, this guy has two All Is Dusts in the sideboard. So I just kept on ticking up. So my Jace was on 11, and, so on his turn, he cast a Thought Knot Seer, takes my Force of Will. I had like a Terminus and a Force of Will in hand. And I'm like, okay, well, if he has anything, I'm kind of screwed. And I also had an Entreat floating on top of the library as an emergency out, but I could never cast it because I knew about all these Warping Whales in his hand, so I just had it floating there forever. So Jace is on 13, you know, ready to go ultimate, ready to win the game. Pass to him. He's like, okay, tap out, all is dust. Blow up your moat, blow up your Jace, and, you know, but he was tapped out, so I'm like, okay, well, I guess now I can go for this entreat and just flip the entreat and swing for lethal, but that was just always kind of a memorable moment.
That's brutal.
that's epic as shit.
Not my playstyle, but I've always loved entreat.
That's what I think I love most about that deck, though. Miracles is just, it's a deck that it always gives you an illusion, like you're making headway or you're getting there, you know what I mean? Like, and it's so good at like sweeping the hope right under you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, I'm building up ground, you know, I'm getting ahead. Oh, I'm actually way behind.
Oh,
you know?
Now
like,
I'm gonna die.
Yeah.
Okay, like, so go ahead, Michael.
So on the opposite side of like Miracles being so good at like giving you the illusion of hope, I love as a burn player playing Exquisite Firecraft and Sudden Shock against the Miracles player, because they're like, yeah, I'll go down to one, that's fine, I got this totally wrapped up, and then you're like, Sudden Shock you, and they pause with their mouth open, like, yeah, I lose. That's my favorite thing.
Sudden Shock is, I love that card. Yeah, okay. I love that card. Sudden Shock of Stoneforge Mystic, that's really good. That just feels like it was like a match made in heaven.
It's especially good when you let them untap with the Stoneforge.
Yeah.
And then go for it, because they'll waste their whole turn. They'll just like, yeah, pass to you. Yeah, cool. End of your turn, I'll Sudden Shock it. They will never make that mistake again.
yeah, exactly. That's one big burn. But this is actually a question, Aaron. How does Stifle interact with a Miracle trigger? For example, I'm playing Stifle. You're playing Miracles. I have a Stifle. You have a Miracle. How do I try and make your day bad?
So the way Stifle works with the Miracle trigger, so Miracle's a trigger, right? So you can Stifle the Miracle trigger. So basically what will end up happening is, so let's say I reveal Terminus for my first card drawn for the turn, then you Stifle the Miracle trigger. So what ends up happening is, so now I can't cast it, so it just comes into my hand, right?
So you don't have to pay anything, you don't have to pay any mana for it, you don't get duped into anything, so basically as long as you're not on 6 mana, it's effectively counterspell.
Well, it's not effectively counterspell because I still have access to it in my hand, right? It's just,
that's what I'm saying, if you have, well, I mean, if I'm not killing you the turn that you're trying to Terminus with a Stifle, then I probably did it wrong in the first place.
Yeah, I mean,
I think I got like one shot, one tricky move.
I mean, it's still really good though, right? Because it, you know, I have to reset it up, right? So I'd have to like brainstorm to put the Terminus back on top and then try it again, right? So it's still really good.
The real sick move, Tony, would be if you had a Vial on 4, and then when he drew his Terminus, he says Terminus trigger, Miracles trigger on the stack, and you're like, sweet, I'll Vial in something, and they go, sure, I'll Vial in this Thought Knot Seer and take the Terminus from your hand. So when the trigger resolves, it's not in your hand anymore.
That's nice.
You can do the same thing with Vendilion Click too, right? Like you can, you know, you reveal Miracle Trigger and then click them and then take the Terminus and put it on the bottom.
Okay, Aaron, quick question. What's better for me, worse for you? Flash Fires or Boil?
Oh.
Worse for me?
Yeah, worse for you.
Oh, Boil by far. I mean, Flash Fires is terrible. Isn't Flash Fire a sorcery?
Yeah. Well, I was just more speaking to the effect.
Okay. Yeah, Boil's worse. I don't want to play against that card.
Sweet. So Choke's pretty good?
I mean, Choke's okay, but I'm not in love with that card in Legacy right now, just because, like,
I haven't seen it. That was one of the things that I was like noticing is it feels like it has potential to be powerful, and you just don't see it.
Well, the reason is because like when Miracles was just like starting out as a deck, like a lot of people like brought in Chokes, and like a lot of Miracles players were inexperienced, and they're like, holy shit, this guy brought a Choke from like left field, and you know, I totally didn't see that coming, right? Well, like now, like, you know, all these Miracles players know, you know, that Lands likes to play Chokes in their sideboard, and you know, this deck likes to play Choke, so it's like they're anticipating you to bring in those type of effects, right? So if the Miracles player knows you're bringing that stuff in, then, you know, they'll have answers for it. So that's why it's not as good. Where it's like something like Boil. Like, unless you force a Will, it, like, it's just going to get you, right?
Choke also has, Miracles can just answer it with a Wear Tear. Like, it's one white. Their planes will stay untapped, so they can just answer the Choke.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you know, like I know Jun's gonna bring that in and Lands, like, you know, you basically bring in wear tear in like 95% of your post board games, so.
And with counterbalance, it only counts as either one or two, correct? Not three?
Right, yeah. It checks it and it sees the wear half and the tear half, so it's one and two, but not three. Because it's not a three and a cost. But if you reveal that to Dark Confidant, though, if you reveal wear tear to Dark Confidant, then you lose three life, right? Because it checks for wear. That's one. Because
blue mages know how to use spells, and black mages don't.
That's fair.
They know how shit works, and cards like Dark Confidant are like, whatever. The flavor text is greatest at any cost, okay? Like. Yeah. Like, don't know. You could have said six, and I still would have put the Hooting Mandrels in my hand.
Greatest at any cost, except for learning how blue cards work.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's too much of a cost.
Yeah, that's way too much cost.
Dark Confidant is a card that sees almost no Legacy play now. Like, he's just nowhere to be seen.
Yeah, and he's not really seen in Modern much anymore either. Like, it's...
Fuck up Jund. Jund always plays
it. Yeah, Jund's always going to play it, but it's... It's still not even that good in Jund. Like, he's just been surpassed. There's other ways to draw cards outside of blue.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Now that in Modern there's Ancestral Vision again, right? That seems to be the flavor of the month, but...
Outside of blue.
to be honest, I think, without getting into too much of Modern right now, it's a highly aggressive format. Like, highly, highly aggressive format. If you're not playing either... an aggressive combo deck, and that means like Scapeshift, Ad Nauseam, fuck Jeskai Sanity because I'm here and I'm pimping it. But then the other like top tier decks are like a form of burn, whether it be Naya or Zoo or whatever, or Affinity or just any of the other decks that are trying to break the rules of the format. It's not really a mid range format where Legacy is that a mid range format.
As someone who plays Ancestral Vision in Modern, like, that card can be real hard to suspend on the draw. You know what I mean? Like, you're playing against an aggressive deck, like, you want to have, like, your Spell Snare up or your, you know, Path to Exile up or whatever. Like, it's sometimes really hard to put that thing on suspend.
The thing about Legacy is that your level zero thinking about Legacy is like, oh, broken turn one combos everywhere. And those things exist to a certain extent, but they tend to be quite fragile. So people move away from those, and what ends up happening, and has been happening a lot in the past couple of years, is that the new cards that are coming into the Legacy pool are predominantly creatures. So the format is naturally slowing down and is becoming more about two mana creatures, highly efficient creatures, and just super efficient removal. That's what the format feels a lot like. Super efficient removal, counter spells, and creatures.
And all super, super mana efficient. Like, that's what the focus is on, right? Being as efficient as possible. The haymakers are in the one and two and three and potentially four mana card slots.
Yeah. The other thing that's true about a lot of the creatures in Legacy is that they have to do something. Like, Tarmogoyf is hyper-efficient, but is almost not good enough for Legacy anymore because it doesn't stop your opponent. But something like Thalia or Phyrexian Revoker, they're much less scary on their own, but they stop your opponent, which is far more valuable.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, we don't have enough time to get into quite every topic we want. But on the topic of stopping your opponents, real quick, what do you guys think of the conspiracy cards? The Chalice Priest?
The Chalice Man?
Yeah, one white for a 2/2. When it comes into play, you choose a number. That's it. You just choose a number. You don't have to pay life. You don't have to fucking sacrifice permanence. You don't have to do anything. You just choose a number. And then, is it nobody or just your opponents?
Your opponents.
Yeah, obviously.
Is it your opponents, really?
I'm pretty sure it's one-sided. I'll look that up right now.
Yeah, that's before we wildly speculate and Aaron starts losing his fucking mind. I'm pretty sure this card is absolutely busted. It's pre-ordering at something like 50 Canadian dollars.
I was wrong. It's symmetric.
Okay, so no one can cast spells of that.
Non-creature spells.
Yeah, sure, non-creature. Non-creature spells, you can just cast creatures around it. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So, Aaron, what do you think of this card?
My opinion, I think it's kind of a stupid, lazy design. Like, I don't like it. Like, I just...
Tell us what you really think.
I mean, it's powerful and everything, and, like, it's good. I just think it's kind of lazy design. Like, the things that, like, I wish Wizards, and this goes back to bitching about Wizards from earlier, but I wish Wizards would, like, do more to promote, like, tier 1.5. Like, Death and Taxes is already a good deck, right? Like, you know, it's a 1.5 deck, and, like, it does its thing, and it does its thing well, and, like, it, you know, takes down tournaments, and, you know, people like the deck, right? Like, you don't need those cards, right? I wish WotC would, like, promote, you know, I wish there was, like a creature toolbox deck in the Legacy format. Like, I wish they would do something like a slightly less broken Survival of the Fittest, you know, something like that, right?
You guys just got the new white Imperial Recruiter that's, like, totally creature toolbox.
Yeah, I like that card. I just, like, honestly, I just don't like Chalice Guy. I think he was unnecessary.
All right, well, Michael, White Recruiter, do you have an opinion, unless you want to talk about it with Chalice Guy?
Chalice Guy, I really don't like. It should really cost some sort of resource to shut off spells. Like, you can just name anything you want. You can name 2, 5, 6, whatever. At least with Chalice, you have to pay the mana, and, like... It sucks that you can just play it and shut off Abrupt Decay immediately. It feels kind of lazy. But the new White Recruiter, I think that's awesome. Like,
I agree,
that guy's,
yeah.
He's just gonna make a bunch of decks more viable. He's gonna make a different type of Death and Taxes deck viable. It's great. Opens up new possibilities. I'm all for that.
Yeah, 100% agree. Like, I think with the Chalice Man, I just don't like when they print, like, new, like, it goes back to what I said a long time ago about, like, Lodestone Golem and all that stuff. Like, people want to be able to, like, play Magic, you know what I mean? Like, people want to play, like, their busted cards, and it's like, you know, you don't have a chance to play them. Yeah, it's like Wizards knows, like, how much people hate, like, Chalice of the Void and Trinisphere and those breed of cards, right? So it's like, yeah. Okay, well, we're gonna print this on a 2/2 body that's, you know, a Chalice of the Void on a stick, basically. It's just lazy design, in my opinion.
Yep, yeah. Totally agree.
Fuck!
Fuck!
We got to that point in the cast where everybody stopped talking.
Yeah, well, we're just basking and thinking about Legacy. It'll happen Legacy players every once in a while. They'll just...
Sorry, I'm...
I muted
myself while I had my great revelation. So,
I decided to break up the, like, all, oh, we got to that point in the cast where everybody stopped talking, and I leaned back in my chair and pulled the fucking headphones out of my shit. So, I was like, oh god, flood of wagon! So, yeah. There's that.
That's been a brief insight into our Friday nights at Face-to-Face Games in Toronto, where we play Legacy every week.
I wish I could just, you know, roll down to Face-to-Face Toronto, you know, and be like, oh, hey, I'm going to come play Legacy and come hang out with you guys and learn about this format. But I don't have that luxury.
Well, when you do get here, Kevy,
I'm going to
lend you a deck.
I live in the land of the free America where we don't have that freedom. So... I've been enlightened. There's quite a few things that were said tonight that I have basically no idea what they were. there are a lot of card names been thrown around, some of which I recognized, as cards and knew what they did, some of which I've never heard before. So this was enlightening for me. I did get some information out of it. I'm glad that you guys were here to kind of give us the real skinny on Legacy. Like,
that's the thing about Eternal formats, though, is, like, people who play these formats are, like, genuinely passionate about them, right? Like, that's why, like,
I've never.
That's why the community is like so willing to like lend decks and like help people out and like, you know, offer them suggestions, because, you know, like Legacy is an expensive format. Like, it's a big barrier to entry, right? But it's like, because, you know, we're so passionate about it in that respect that it's like, you know, we want more people, right? We want more people to play.
Well, yeah, like, you're literally at the point in the Legacy community, like, you know, in each local area even, you're at the point where it's like, you know, me lending my deck out creates one more person in this community that actually matters, because I might be able to play against him a little bit, you know, down the road. You know, that'll add one more person to, you know, these tournaments that we're putting together. And of course, Standard, Modern, that's a little bit different. It's like, and not saying that you shouldn't, but like, you know, whether you lend your deck to somebody or not, may or probably won't have any effect on how many people are at your next tournament. But with Legacy, it's like, oh, you know, it's a small enough community that, like, you know, fostering that, like, bringing new people into it, like, one, it's awesome. Like, you know, we love this game. We love the formats that we play, and like getting somebody into it is fulfilling in its own. But then it's like, shit, man, you're actually creating more opponents to play against that it's actually, gonna matter to you. So I am way into it. I totally dig it. I'm totally into fucking, like, learning Legacy. Again, you know, being where I'm at kind of poses an issue, because I don't have any Legacy players to fucking play with. Like, I'm pretty sure Gumby has played some Legacy. I would assume so. Dude's an accomplished Magic player, and I think he's got a few Legacy decks. But, you know, other than, like, Gumby, like, there's nobody else around here that really plays Legacy. So, I like the idea. We were talking about
it. We'll do it for you.
You know, you guys could do it for me. That'd be neat, too, because then I won't have to. but I also could, you know, maybe proxy up a few Legacy decks. Like, you know, look up some deck lists. And, yeah, I mean, like, I've got my Legacy burn deck, but, like, you know, proxy up a few other of the more expensive Legacy lists, or maybe have Daniel at least proxy up the shit that he doesn't have from, you know, his side of the table. And
you're going to Vegas, though, right?
Oh yeah, I'm gonna be in Vegas. Of course.
Right. So, you know, borrow a Legacy deck and play the Legacy GP, right?
You know, goddamn.
I want to do that so fucking bad. Oh my god.
I'm gonna play Legacy in fucking Vegas. I'm just bringing my burn deck.
Do it.
Yeah, it's gonna be so awesome. Are you guys planning on going in Legacy, Michael? I know you got some plans to travel safe soon.
Yeah, we'll see. That's far enough away. It's next summer, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yes. June 14th or something.
It's a ways out, but we have learned over the years that the earlier you can get in on planning with Vegas, the better.
I like how Aaron casually dropped the exact date, like he didn't know.
Yeah, he's like,
yo, hotels are getting expensive, you should check them out. This is where I got mine.
No, for real. it's gonna be a legit pain in the ass this year, or next year, because it's, you know, it's gotten bigger. Like, from the
It's a little bit bigger.
From the first one to the second one was exponentially bigger, and I would expect nothing less from the third one. And
fourth and fifth in the same weekend? Yeah, exactly. It's going to be bananas.
Like fucking EDC in Vegas that weekend again, and so, like, hotel rooms are already fucking getting booked for that, and
I heard there's a World Series of Poker weekend, too.
Whether we do the fucking the mansions again, or if we just do like blocks of hotel rooms, like either way, we should get on it fairly soon so that we can get it handled before we're like, ah, shit, scrambling. But yes, I will definitely be in Vegas, and I feel like there's no reason for me not to bring my Legacy deck. And my solemn pledge to the SVU this coming year of Vegas is to actually play some Magic, to actually fucking, you know, enter the tournament, play in the tournament, not sure which one yet, but enter the tournament, play some legitimate Magic, because, as you all know, the first year of Vegas, I entered the tournament, and then I dropped with a huge pile of cash in my pool. And then the second Vegas, I just opted out of playing Magic for the entire, like, five fucking days I was there. Other than, like, the random booze cube game, or I think I got in, like, a round or two of cube. This time, I'm going to play some Magic. This is the one thing that, like, nobody's really got to see much of me doing is actually playing Magic. So, I'll be there doing that. It'll be awesome.
Sweet. Well, no, Kevy, I'm going to fight you.
All right.
Thanks, Aaron and Michael. I know, Michael, you and I, we spent a lot of time on air and talking about stuff like this together, but Aaron, this is our first time, and I've thoroughly enjoyed it, and as I always do your company. So thanks, guys. I really appreciate blah, 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 slurp, slurp, slurp. Thanks for coming on the show.
Blah, blah, slurp, slurp.
It was an absolute pleasure.
You know what? You guys were awesome. You guys were professional as shit. Like, not that you needed that to be on this cast. I feel like you guys actually kind of detracted from my normal just drunken profane debauchery. you guys actually had me trapped in this whole like, oh, I want to learn about Legacy, and I'm listening. I'm actually listening to what you have to say instead of interrupting and hunt back and forth. There's something to be said there. Like,
next time we'll have one of us be the bad cop, so you can just yell at the bad cop.
And I like it. You guys should come back as a team and play good cop, bad cop. Be like, this is why you want to play Legacy, man. I'm telling you, it's a great format. And be like, no! No, you fucking stay out of our format. You play Modern for the rest of your life, you piece of shit. And you're like, no, but really, like, listen. Yeah,
I could definitely pull the part of the bad cop for Modern.
Yeah, really.
Mike, how many rants did you listen to me go on about Modern on the car ride home?
Yeah, I think last week you played a total of three turns of Modern in a tournament and dropped.
Yeah, it was something like that. Yeah.
Just like me, except for I love that format.
No, you'll have to invite me back to go on about that. I can be the backup.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You motherfuckers are on the short list of coming back, because tonight was incredibly fucking informative for me. There's probably the dozen listeners that we have probably know more about Legacy than I do, and so they were probably able to put a lot more together than I was able to, but we very much appreciate you guys coming out. It was fucking awesome. And shit, I think that, like, all we got left is, you know, Tony, do you want to do it?
No, you can do it. It's fine.
Go fuck yourself, San Diego! Oh man, I'm halfway through this fifth of vodka since we started the podcast. I'm a little bit on the drug side at this point.
I gotta work tomorrow, so.
I do too. You guys are also 3 hours ahead of me, like the sun's still out where I'm at.
Okay.
California. But I also do have to work at 8:00 in the morning.
What time do you have to get up tomorrow, Kevy?
What time does my alarm start going off, or what time do I...
Yeah. What time does your alarm start going off?
My alarm starts going off at 3:40, and then I usually get up around, like, 3:59. Because I'm all right. As long as I'm up before 4, I'm good. And then, I start work at 5. I gotta go about fucking... It's about 25 miles away, so it takes me 15 minutes to get there. And I gotta be able to get up, shower, and fucking, you know, run to the store.
Wait. 25 miles, 15 minutes? That means you drive 100 miles an hour to get there?
No, I absolutely drive between 100 and 110 because it's a long open desert road that's very, it was recently repaved, like long open desert highway, and there's maybe tops 8 cars on the road, like coming and going on my way to work. So I pretty much just fucking haul balls and get it, because I used to drive like 80. I mean, the speed limit's 55 on that road. Like, let's be serious. Because it's a two-lane. It's a two-lane.
It gets so sticky down here.